Welcome to the Warrior Cat Wing of the Animation History Museum. I will be guiding your tour today. I hope you have nothing else planned. Warrior Cats is a book series that follows a society of feral cats who live in these groups that are kind of a mix between a gang and a cult. While they are considered kids' books, I will say Warrior Cats is less fun time happy cat adventures and more Watership Down. We won't be getting too graphic here, but a lot of the cats don't make it. Now, you might be wondering why these books have their own dedicated wing in the Animation History Museum. These are letters, not pictures, stupid. Well, you see, this fan base has the most animated fan base ever. Yes, even more than that one you really like. People love to draw these cats. Coming up is one of my favorite pieces. The artist's use of anime hair and Windows Movie Maker transitions perfectly encapsulates that indescribable era of 2009. And I especially love the artist's bold choice of including their OC into this piece, really calling to the essence of the human experience and that desire to rescue a villain who is also your comfort character. Something you need to understand is that kids who are now adults have been drawing these cats for quite some time. We have records of kids drawing these cats all the way back in 2004. And if you were a Warrior Cat fan during the 2008 housing market crash, then you were eating extremely well, not with food, but with edgy cat animations drawn entirely by a mouse. Fans were making anime openings, AMVs, and graphic depictions of some of the more Watership Down moments in the series. I'm blurring these out because mutilated cats bum me out. And just like the books that are still coming out, the warriors never stopped drawing. I don't want to sound dramatic, but you could spend the rest of your life watching nothing but Warrior Cat fan animations and still not have seen them all. I actually haven't done the math on that yet, but trust me, there's a lot. Is this playlist still going? I have been fully aware of the vast quantity of Warrior Cat fan animations for quite some time. Heck, I've even hired some of them. But I've never been able to truly enjoy a Warrior Cat fan animation, as I've never read these books growing up, because all the kids in my class who did pretended to be the cats during recess and would hiss at me whenever I tried talking to them, which even back then I was like, okay, this is a little weird, guys. But I regret not reading these books growing up, because now I'm left with all these unanswered questions. Why are so many people drawn to drawing these fictional cats? What are these feelings stirring in my bosom as I watch these? And why do the art styles change so much? As we move down the Warrior Cat fan animation timeline, around 2012 is when the Warriors really begin to specialize in multi-animator projects. Basically, there were so many people willing to draw these cats that a large group of them all worked together, each animating a different segment of a video, and then when everyone's segment gets done in 14 months, the finished segments get stitched together into one complete video. I guarantee you've seen at least one of these group reanimator projects before, and you might have the Warriors to thank for that. I don't know who started the trend. Maps work out great for everyone, because now you and 40 of your animation buddies only have to animate a few seconds of a cat fight, and we get to watch a super engaging music video with changing art styles every 6 seconds. I really have to commend everyone who puts these projects together, especially the ones that were done before messaging apps like Discord even existed. But what I find extremely impressive is that everyone who signs up for these projects are doing so simply for exposure. No one involved expects any type of monetary compensation, and Warrior maps are very often made to copyrighted music, meaning no one's making money off these projects anyways. I can only imagine what musicians must go through when their manager tells them, "You're not gonna believe this! Someone just made a fan-animated music video of your song on YouTube!" And then the artist goes to watch it, and they just see a bunch of cartoon cats fighting each other. Violently. Can I tell you a quick story time? Once I wandered into a Barnes & Noble and thought, I wonder if they have any physical copies of Warrior Cats, because that is something I am willing to buy. So I went to the young adult section, looked under W, and found nothing. They didn't have any. Well, that's too bad, I thought. I mean, between the main books, graphic novels, and super editions, there's only over 100 different books, with new ones still being written to this day, but I guess this BNN doesn't have any. Oh well. But then I had the disturbing realization that I might be looking in the wrong place. I was looking in the young adult section. I needed to extend my search to the kids' corner, spelled with a Z. So I gingerly walked from the kid book section to the little kid book section, trying to find the book I was currently reading. And there, next to the barn built into the wall and the blocks, were the Warriors. I'm not going to judge you on whatever books you like to read, because I live in a glass house. If I was ever going to understand what made people so drawn to drawing these violent feral kitty cats, then I would have to start reading these. So, whether you never read these books but are curious to know why so many people are drawing the characters, or maybe you did read these books a long time ago and want a refresher from the perspective of an adult who didn't grow up with them. Either way, get your favorite cat treat and knock something off a counter as we dive paws first into the wild and wonderful world of Warrior Cats. So, spoiler warning for Warrior Cats. Our main protagonist is Rusty, a handsome ginger Tom. Those are not my words. That is how he's described in the character description at the front of the book. Ignore that he's called Firepaw right now. Firepaw and Rusty are the same cat. It'll make sense in a little bit. Rusty is a regular house cat living with people, or as he would call them, two legs. You see, cats have some pretty unique slurs for everyday normal human things. This isn't a car driving on a road. It's a monster on the Thunderpath. Personally, I love it when books explain everyday mundane human things from, like, a non-human perspective. Like, yeah, a car would be a monster to a cat. It merges without using a turn signal. Now, our main cat, Rusty, grows tired of his soft kitty pet life and thinks maybe living in the forest directly behind his backyard would sorta kinda be cool. But he's not ready for a big life change just yet. But then one day, Rusty's only friend in the entire world named Smudge, he tells Rusty, "Hey, did you know when our owners take us to the vet, they chop our guys off?" Fellas, would you spend the rest of your life surviving in the woods if it meant you gotta keep both of your dudes? I would. So, like many other unneutered male cats, Rusty abandons his soft kitty pet life and sets out to start a new, wild and free life in the forest directly behind his backyard. It turns out there's a whole society of wild feral kitty cats living in the forest behind Rusty's backyard, and they've divided themselves into four distinct groups, or clans. The first clan we're going to be looking at is Thunder Clan. This is the clan our protagonists belong to and where most of the story takes place. These cats are the moral, compassionate, brave ones. Gryffindor. The next clan is Shadow Clan. These are the edgy, evil cats. Slytherin. Sure, there's evil cats in every clan, but a lot of them are from Shadow Clan, especially in Season 1. Because they have Shadow in the name, I always imagined every cat here was just a black Halloween cat. The next clan is River Clan. Their main thing is, they swim. I wouldn't call them Ravenclaw because they're not smart. They're more of a water tribe. And the next clan is Wind Clan, but you don't need to worry. They're Hufflepuffs, so. Cats from different clans hate each other and are super territorial. Don't even think about falling in love and starting a family with a cat from a different clan. That is so unaccepted, it happens constantly. And those are the four clans in the forest. However, there's one clan not in the forest we need to talk about called Star Clan. Ooh. Did you know cats have their own religion? Your childhood cat isn't going to be kicking it with you in boring old two-leg heaven. They're going to be sharing tongues with their ancestors in Star Clan. Sharing tongues is like when cats lick each other, like, you know, normal cat behavior. But whenever I read sharing tongues, I always thought they were like French kissing or something. Star Clan is basically warrior cat heaven.
And it's so much more than a character looking up at the night sky and seeing their deceased dad in the clouds. Instead, StarClan plays a much bigger role in the books, and we get to frequently visit and see what wacky antics the Cat Angels get up to. So even though there is a lot of death in Warrior Cats, just because a cat dies doesn't mean it's the last we'll ever see of them. They'll just be in their angel form from now on. And those are the five clans you need to know about. It's just those four main ones and Warrior Cat Heaven. There's not going to be, like, a secret sixth clan or anything. Now, normally, forest cats are super big on cat purity and would never allow this random outsider into their clan.
But you see, the leader of Thunder Clan, named Blue Star, she had a pretty good reason to allow this handsome Ginger Tom into the clan.
Blue Star, you know, kind of thought he was the chosen one. And he canonically still had both of his guys, so. Prophecies play a very big role in the wild world of Warrior Cats. And the first prophecy we hear about is fire alone will save the clan. So knowing that fire alone will save the clan, Blue Star sees this handsome Ginger Tom just wandering through the forest and officially accepts him into Thunder Clan, bestowing him the new name,
Fire Paw. See, that's why the front of the book called him Fire Paw, remember? Now it's making sense. So completely remove the name Rusty from your brain. That's never coming back. Everyone who's read these books knows this cat as Fire Paw. He's got a paw of fire.
By this point, you've probably noticed a pretty unique formula to some of these cat names. Blue Star? Fire Paw? Let's take a look at some of these other characters, shall we? Let's see, we got Ashfur, Mousefur, Leopardfur, Frostfur, Russetfur, Oakfur, Brackenfur, Sootfur, Ashfur again? Okay, what the fur is going on? What's with all these war- If you are not privy to the naming convention of these warrior cat characters, the nomenclature of these cat names follows a simple two-part system. Every cat's name is made up of any of these prefixes and any of these suffixes. Can you see that? Graypaw, White Storm, Blue Star. Every name is like this. Mountain Dew is a valid warrior cat name. Now, I already knew about these ridiculous double syllable names going into the series, and I was legitimately worried it would be impossible for me to keep track and remember all of these cat names. But do you want to know something I didn't know going into this series? Their name changes. When I got to the first name-changing ceremony, I threw the book down thinking, I'm not smart enough to understand the complexities of warrior cats. I should just give up. But then I thought, no. If a 9-year-old child in 2008 can remember all these ridiculous cat names, then so can I. And then I got to one of the many kit birthing scenes, and all the cats would go, oh boy, more warriors for ThunderClan. Everyone welcome Ice Kit and Fox Kit. And I would go,
I hope Ice Kid and Fox Kid die.
But I must say, once you really get into this series, remembering all the different cat names isn't that big of an issue. First of all, sometimes the cat's name will just be a short description of what they physically look like, ergo make them easier to remember. What do you think Running Nose looks like? What do you think Spider Legs looks like? I don't know what Mouse Fur looks like, but in my head, she's always wearing like a mouse costume. And just everyone, no one addresses it. They're just like, that's mouse fur. What's really bad is that there's like mouse fur and then mouse kit, like in the same scene. And it's like, what are we doing here, Aaron? And as strange as these names sound, there's actually a methodology to them that correlates to what rank a cat is. Kittens will always have the suffix kit. You read the sentence, Ice Kit and Fox Kit were playing in the hollow. You don't have to worry about them. They don't matter. Apprentices will always have the suffix paw, because they're apprentices. Fire paw and gray paw are both apprentices. And anything above them is when the warrior names get a little more creative and don't have a set suffix, except for the very top, the leaders, which always have the name Star. Which means you have to be careful reading the wiki, because sometimes learning a cat's up-to-date name is a spoiler. Now instead of having to remember Gray Stripe, Blue Star, White Storm, all you really have to remember is Gray, Blue,
white.
And while we're looking at the clan hierarchy, can I just talk about medicine cats real quick? Medicine cats are responsible for healing the sick and injured clanmates, and they don't use, like, medicine. All of their healing comes from herbs found locally in the forest, but I always felt like the books were stretching some of the healing properties they claimed these herbs possessed. Okay, the cats are constantly getting into fights, so they're getting scratches, and the med cats would put cobwebs over wounds. Okay, I can sort of see that working as like a natural band-aid. But then, during one of the many kit birthing scenes, the med cats would be like, "Oh no! Give her a poppy seed to calm her down!" And I was always like, a singular poppy seed? Like, from a bagel? At least give her, like, a couple.
So back in the forest, Rusty meets all the other Apparentices in ThunderClan. And one Apparentis confides in our hero some terrible news. He secretly witnessed this other cat named Tigerclaw murder another cat in his own clan.
Tigerclaw is here, and he murdered the cat here, the deputy. Because deputies of a clan are next in line to be leader, so he couldn't just murder the leader, he has to murder the deputy so he could be deputy, and then he can murder the leader. Do you understand? Good. Okay, cool.
I just want to point out that I got this corkboard off Facebook Marketplace, and the pictures did not show how badly sun-damaged it was.
So immediately, this series sets up Tigerclaw as the main bad guy of the story, that he's willing to murder cats in his own clan to become leader. And getting to become the leader of a clan is a very enticing idea to Tigerclaw because leaders get blessed by StarClan with 9 lives. Every other cat only gets 1 life, but the leaders get to die 8 extra times.
And I really like this plot device because as the series goes on, we get to keep track of how many times a leader loses a life, and the suspense builds and builds as we get closer to that final one. Now, our heroes kinda do everything in their power not to tell anyone that Tigerclaw is the bad guy. Like, there's seriously a scene where Firepaw gets a one-on-one training session with Blue Star, and he's like, "I should probably tell the leader of my clan about the broad-shoulder backstabbing murderer named Tigerclaw in the clan." But then Blue Star's like, "Fight me!" And then he gets caught up in the fighting, and then he just forgets to tell her. Okay. So just like the other characters, we're gonna keep the thought of Tigerclaw being the main bad guy in the back of our mind because we got more important stuff to worry about. ShadowClan just attacked ThunderClan for no reason. Oh, fuck! And they end up killing Firepaw's secret crush, who he barely talked to and was way older than him and practiced celibacy.
The Thundercats and Shadowcats face off in a big epic battle, and eventually the heroic Thundercats defeat the evil Shadowcats.
And as the first episode comes to a close, Blue Star promotes Firepaw to the warrior class.
Firepaw's new warrior name is Fireheart.
Alright, that's now 2 times our protagonist has changed names in 1 book.
Now that Fireheart is officially a warrior, I would like to take a quick palate-cleansing break from the wild world of warrior cats, because I would feel extremely remiss if I didn't share with you all a rather humorous story time about an instance where I, too, was trying to become a warrior.
So when I was deep into reading these books, I went to this boxing gym because I was training for nothing, apparently. And on my drive to said boxing gym, I would listen to the Warriors. It helped me get into the right headspace, I guess. Now, the way the parking lot at this gym worked was that sometimes you'd park your car in front of another car, and then you would give your keys to the receptionist guy at the front, and he would move your car for you. Totally fine, totally cool, except for the one time I made the mistake of leaving my phone in the car, a phone that would auto-connect and immediately play the last thing I was listening to if said car were to turn on. At any given moment, I'd like to think my social interaction skills are at a 7 out of 10. Pretty good, but still room for improvement. In the middle of a boxing class, I'm covered in sweat, I got stink lines coming off me, now I'm at a 6 out of 10. But when the boxing gym receptionist comes up to me and says, "Hey man, you left your phone in your car. By the way, love the book you're reading." Whoosh! Now I'm at a 0. I've talked to this receptionist before, and he knew I did YouTube, so I tried desperately to explain myself. Oh, you know, I'm going to make a video about it. Plus, I wanted to read more this year. And then he asks, are you going to mention
the movie?
I was cut off by this. I knew there wasn't a Warrior Cats movie, but I was absolutely not going to argue about it with the boxing gym receptionist in front of a bunch of dudes punching each other. So I just went, there's a movie? And he goes, yeah, there's a movie. And the way he said, yeah, there's a movie, made it sound like I was the dumb one for not knowing about the Warrior Cats movie. And I forget exactly what I said after that, but it was probably along the lines of, could someone please punch me so I no longer have to be in this conversation? And for the whole rest of the class, I could not fathom why that guy was so positive about the existence of a movie that definitely didn't exist. Did he see someone reenact the entire book with Littlest Pet Shop Dolls and think that was a movie?
I'm sure gonna miss you, Ravenpaw.
Why don't we share tongues one last time?
It wasn't until I got back to my car when things started to click. When I turned my car on and connected my phone, the little dashboard screen thingy didn't say, now playing Warriors, The New Prophecy, Episode 5. All it said was now playing Twilight. So he thinks I was reading that, and I don't know which is worse.
So, diving paws first back into the wild world of Warrior Cats, Fireheart's best bro for life, who is now named
Graystripe,
starts being a little horn cat. It's like horn dog, but it's a horn cat. Being a little frisky boy.
You see, it all started when Graystripe accidentally fell into a river and was rescued by a cat in River Clan. And these two cats from different clans immediately hit it off. But this will just be the first example of one of the many universal truths about Warrior Cats. All it takes for two characters to fall deeply in love with each other is if they ever appear in a scene together. And that's especially true for cats from different clans. Something about betraying your whole clan is sexy, I guess. Meow.
Fireheart keeps his best bro's forbidden relationship a secret when all of a sudden,
she's pregnant? And she's having the kits now? Graystripe's gonna be a dad? Graystripe's girlfriend doesn't make it through kit birth, but luckily, her kids do. We have the boy one and the girl one. You don't have to worry about them ever again. This leaf blower is killing me. What do I do? What do I do about this leaf blower? Do I ask him to stop?
After this scene, Graystripe's forbidden relationship made a lot more sense to me. It felt rushed and contrived because this was never a love story. It was an I got the River Clan leader's daughter pregnant who then died in kit birth story. A classic tale for all children's books. This death was the first in the series that made me go, whoa, Warrior Cats don't mess around. Who kills off the pregnant girlfriend? And then Graystripe tries living in River Clan for a bit, but that ultimately falls through, so he doesn't get to live there anymore, and he never gets to see his two kids grow up. Well, his first two kids.
While Graystripe was going behind everyone's back to visit his River Clan girlfriend, Fireheart was going behind everyone's back to visit his biological sister at her Two Legs Nest. And she tells him, you know, you're making the idea of living in the forest sound totally cool and awesome. I don't want to completely uproot my life, though, so could you take one of my kids away and force him to live with you? This is Cloudtail, Fireheart's sister's son. The books never call this white cat Fireheart's nephew. They always called him his sister's kit, sister's son, or sister's firstborn.
Now, this could just be because cats are quirky with words and don't have a name to describe the relationship of your sister's son. But the more the books kept avoiding ever using the word nephew, the more I started to worry that nephew was too big of a word for this reading level. But then the books throw the word jubilant at you? You're not going to use nephew, but jubilant's fine? You seriously going to make me pull out a dictionary, Warrior Cat? Since Cloudtail was thrown into clan life kind of against his will, he doesn't super respect the strict set of rules all the clan cats follow. And he's an atheist. doesn't believe in StarClan, like, at all. That detail never really comes up, but the books let you know that he is one. It's super important that you know the religious views of these cats, okay? Cloudtail ends up getting captured by Two Legs, and now it's up to his mother's brother to rescue him. When this scene was first introduced, I got super excited, because by now, so much of the drama in this series has been cats fighting over prey, cats fighting over territory, and cats fighting over love. So when the opportunity of a rescue my sister's son heist was introduced, I was excited just for something different. Fireheart's going to have to navigate through a two-leg nest he's never been in before and describe all the mundane human things he sees from his non-human cat perspective. What is this strange hissing elephant? I love it when books do that kind of stuff. But while I was thinking of all the interesting possibilities, Fireheart just opens the front door and Cloudtail escapes. He never even goes inside. Cool. Glad you're back, Cloudtail. You're going to follow the strict set of rules, but still be an atheist? No, that's fine. Yeah, I think I saw some fresh kill we could hunt back there. Once our heroes were finally done dealing with their atheist nephew and pregnant girlfriend, they finally came to their senses and told the leader Blue Star about the murderous broad-shouldered Tiger Claw in the clan.
And it actually got to a point where I started to question if Tiger Claw really was the main bad guy.
Now, this might just be because I watch too many movies, but when something tries this hard to tell me he's the main bad guy, especially this early on in the story, I start to think, yeah, I can smell this plot twist coming from a mile away. Fireheart never had any proof Tiger Claw was evil. He was just blindly believing what this other random apprentice was saying. Tiger Claw was there when Cinderpelt got her legs run over, but we don't know for sure he caused the accident. How does a cat even orchestrate something like that? Yeah, he might be constantly giving off bad vibes, but that's just all part of the misdirection. I'm telling ya, there's enough wiggle room here for this cat to actually be the misunderstood good guy. But it turns out, no. He is evil, and he did all those evil things. Tiger Claw, what is this? Blue Star's meow was sharper now, edged with anger, not fear. I'm the leader of your clan. I'm the leader of your clan. Or have you forgotten that? Not for much longer, Tiger Claw growled. I'm going to kill you, and kill you again, as many times as it takes for you to join StarClan forever. It wasn't until I read that exact line when I started to think, okay, Tiger Claw is for sure the main bad guy. I thought it was ambiguous this whole time, but no, he's the bad guy, he's bad.
So the villain of the story turned out to be a character I wasn't expecting to be the villain, making Tiger Claw, at least for me, an untwisted twist villain.
So Tiger Claw is exiled from the camp, and since Blue Star no longer trusts anyone else in the camp, except for Fireheart, she promotes him to clan deputy. Meaning, at the start of the series, Fireheart was here, below everyone in the clan, and by the end of episode 3, he's already here, second in command. Next in line to be leader.
But the cherry on top, this terrible news cake, is that our main bad guy, Tiger Claw, isn't done doing main bad guy things. Shadow Clan just made some pretty significant changes to the clan hierarchy.
Our main bad guy, Tiger Claw, who was the biggest proponent of cat purity, by the way, switches teams and becomes the new leader of Shadow Clan.
He finally got his wish of becoming leader and getting 9 lives. We're dealing with Tiger Star now. Then Tiger Star sets a pack of wild dogs loose in the ThunderClan camp, and they end up killing random background characters.
It's one of those wild feral dogs that kill cats and tear off faces. Oh, it's so the horror! I'm getting attacked by a dog! Ah! Oh, wait, I'm wearing makeup. Maybe you should.
The dogs chase Fireheart off a cliff and into some rushing water, and right as the light begins to fade from his eyes, Blue Star swoops in and rescues him.
But I guess that used up the last of her energy because, in a horrible twist of fate, She's now dying. And it's her last life, by the way. I've been keeping track.
This one's for you, Blue Star.
Okay, so she's out of the picture. Fireheart, the current clan deputy, becomes the new leader of ThunderClan, which also means he's going to change name.
His new name is Firestar. All right? It's not Fireheart or Firepaw, and it's certainly not Rusty. This is Firestar. This will be the last time that he changes names. It's physically impossible for him to change names again.
Unfortunately, this moment was spoiled for me. I always knew that Rusty would be the leader of ThunderClan because while I was researching this video, I remembered this classic fan animation I saw ages ago about Fireheart not liking waffles.
Oh, waffle time, it's waffle time. Will you have some waffle mine?
So I watched this video again for entirely research purposes and was horrified to see the video was actually called Firestar Doesn't Like Waffles. This video was a pretty big spoiler for me. So Tigerstar and Firestar are now both topped to the nines new lives. If we're ever going to defeat Tigerstar, he's going to have to be eliminated 9 times. Voldemort only needed 8 times. It's going to be a race of cat and cat to see who will be the last cat to lose their final life. And with the amount of books that are still in the series, I could see their rivalry lasting a really, really long time. Until this series goes in a direction that I think I should mention spoiler warning again, because wow. If you're at all familiar with this story and know what's about to happen, I bet you've just been dying for me to get to this part. To help accomplish his destroy Firestar by any means necessary plan, Tigerstar teams up with Blood Clan? Here's my mood board for the secret sixth clan that's been here this whole time. These are the extremely tough city cats. They live in the city that we've never heard of before. They don't have strange double syllable names or believe in a star clan, but they still call themselves a clan and have a clan leader for some reason. The leader of Blood Clan is Tiny. He's this tiny little black cat that wears a dog teeth collar. And he's a fan favorite. That's what all of this has been building up. You see? Scourge. 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 I'm Scourge. I already pointed at myself. I know I've been doing a lot of Harry Potter references throughout this video, but I don't think there's a single Harry Potter character that best encompasses who this cat is. I think the best fictional character I could make a comparison to is Shadow the Hedgehog. So how are they going to fight two evil clans that formed an alliance? Well, the thing is, tiny little Scourge betrays Tigerstar and murders him in front of everyone. But that's okay. He's got 9 lives, remember? Wait, what's happening? Again, the massive tabby's body grew still for a heartbeat. But again, the wound was too terrible to yield to the healing trance. His claws tore up clumps of grass in his agony, while his screeches turned from fury to terror. This is a kid's book. He's dying 9 times! Holy sh**, said Firestar.
Tiny little Scourge kills Tigerstar so badly that he dies, resurrects, and then dies again 9 times. So the villain of the story turned out to be a character I wasn't expecting to be the villain. They got me twice!
Initially, I was in denial. No, Tigerstar canonically had 9 lives. He can't die instantly to a cat we just met. This scene had me so flabbergasted that I had to reach out to someone. And everyone I talked to about it was always like, oh, you mean Scourge? I love Scourge. Scourge is so cool. And then I thought, okay, if this cat is so beloved, I should at least give him a chance. Maybe this whole time, the books were actually setting up how evil and ruthless this Scourge guy is. You thought that cat was the main bad guy? This new guy just killed him with barely any effort. This also sets up that Firestar's brand new 9 lives are essentially worthless because this new cat can just kill you and have you instantly burn through all 9 of them. Well, not instantly. Slow and painfully. which is definitely worse.
All right. It's a little unconventional, but if this is how the series sets up the actual main bad guy, then let's do it. Scourge, you've won me over.
When Scourge and Firestar face off for control over the whole forest, Scourge very easily kills Firestar, because of course he does. Firestar is just a random kitty pet who stumbled his way up the clan hierarchy. And this is Scourge. Ultimate life form Scourge.
Firestar
dies. Except this time, when Scourge kills a clan leader, he only loses once. One life. He only dies once because of the power of friendship or something. I think it's a metaphor for Jesus, actually, and I'm not making that up. Unlike Tiger Star, Firestar successfully, I'm sorry, fellas, I'm keeping you away from your, like, friends and family. Firestar successfully resurrects, and Scourge is very understandably caught off guard by this because he's never seen a cat do that before. So this time when they face off, it goes a little like this. And that's how season one of Warrior Cats ends. As you know, we frequently get to visit and see what wacky antics the cat angels get up to in Cat Heaven. And while Tiger Star's ghost makes a pretty prevalent comeback, basically becoming the new Cat Satan, we never get to see Scourge or his spiky collar ever again. How is a cat who only shows up in this much of the story, kills the main bad guy, and then leaves and never comes back this beloved? It's because he's the ultimate life form, baby. If the only knowledge of warrior cats you have is from what I've told you in this video, while you do know more than the average person about warrior cats, you're still probably not going to understand what most of these fan animations are really about, because we only looked at 6 books out of like 100, and you don't know what the characters actually look like. I've just been showing you Garfield characters. However, my dear viewer, I really wanted to get the full Warrior Cat experience. So I read season 4. This is 4. Shit. I've read season 2, season 3, and season 4. Really just trying to get the full Warrior Cat experience. Season 4 seemed like a good stopping point. I also forgot to mention, I read the Super Editions too. It was like 27 books. 27 books. I've read 27 books this year. Get on my level. I didn't want to do all of them. I'm not crazy, okay? I'm in a padded room. I'm not crazy. So, with me as your local Warrior Cat expert, I can safely say I still have no clue what most of these fan animations are about. It's not my fault that I don't understand these. Most of the things that these people are animating aren't even canon. They've just been animating fan fiction this whole time. Cleopatra takes a character who's not even that prevalent and imagines her as an Egyptian Sphinx cat who has, like, no ties to Egypt at all in the books. Next up forever, what if Firestar and Scourge switched lives and Firestar was the one with the spiky collar? Holyphon, all right, this one's got a giant snake monster in it. Mr. Fear asks the question, what if there was a zombie outbreak in Warrior Cats? Scavengers of the Wind, this one's also got a zombie theme going on and is genuinely the most terrifying Warrior Cat animation I've ever seen. I was legit watching this on my TV and I had to turn it off halfway through because it was so terrifying. I don't want to talk about it anymore. It took me reading almost 30 books to finally understand that Warrior Cat fan animations aren't meant to be understood. It seems like people just like drawing cats. But why is that?
Now, I actually have 5 different reasons why I think people are so drawn to drawing these cats. And the first reason is because cats are just fun to draw. Think about it this way. Would you rather spend years studying human anatomy, toiling away for hours trying to get the fingers right, or would you rather just draw a dumb little cat with a new woo face? Reason number 2 is the expansive world. This is the official Warrior Cats family tree. There's quite a few characters that I skipped over. I once heard someone describe Warrior Cats as Game of Thrones for kids, and while I've never seen or read any Game of Thrones, I totally agree with that sentiment. It's even got the incest and everything. Since there are so many characters and little mini-adventures, it's very easy for someone to have a favorite character or moment that they can connect with, regardless of how prevalent they are in the story. And the third reason I think people are so drawn to drawing these cats is the lack of official art at the time. These days, Warrior Cat fans have official graphic novels that they get to look at, and I do own them, but I keep lending them out to people, so that's my bad. But in the early 2010s, all fans had to go off of were words and their imaginations, which I think made people more inclined to draw out their favorite moments in the series, regardless of how graphic and gory they were. In fact, the kids really like drawing the graphic and gory stuff. That's a conversation for another time. The fourth reason I think people like drawing these cats is how this series is perfectly set up to be a fandom.
Is that what it says?
Perfectly. That's hilarious. Creating your own Warrior Cat OC with a tragic backstory and a unique double-syllable name is not only very easy to do, but it's actually encouraged by the books themselves. At the back of some of these books is this, like, fully plotted out Warrior Cat D&D campaign inviting readers to pretend to be the cats. I always thought the kids during recess who pretended to be the cats were just very devoted fans, but they were just following the instructions the books clearly laid out for them. And the last reason I think people like drawing these cats is because their passion is infectious. I highly recommend you go down the same Warrior Cat fan animation rabbit hole that I did, because what you'll find is thousands of dedicated fans all creating art of their favorite book series. And they're not doing it for money or for views, but because they're passionate. And there's also like a bunch of videos that are over 15 years old, and that just makes me nostalgic for that early era of YouTube. I went into this video trying to understand what it was about this series that made people want to draw the cats. But the funny thing is, I ended up drawing these cats too. It's a virus. These cats are so drawable. I initially got my start online creating webcomics. It's something I enjoy doing. I love thinking of a joke, doodling it out, and sharing it with the world. That's my passion. And I guess seeing all of these passionate artists creating these fan animations looked like a whole lot of fun. And the fact that the main character is a ginger male cat, come on, that's just too perfect of an opportunity to do a Garfield reference. I don't think anyone's ever done that before. So, me and my team created 40 Garfield-inspired Warrior Cat webcomics, and we posted them every Wednesday. And even though we didn't make any money off of them, I really enjoyed making them and posting them every Wednesday. And not to get too vulnerable here, I know these are just Garfield comics, but they really helped me find my passion in creating art again. So thank you all for reading them. I hope you enjoyed. So if you're someone that's missing a little passion in your life, try watching hours of Warrior Cat fan animations. They're a whole ton of fun to watch. They do get a little violent at times, so, you know, be aware of that. And if you're someone that's ever produced a Warrior Cat fan animation, thank you for inspiring others to follow their passions. And if anyone on the Aaron Hunter team is watching, I hope you know you've made a lot of kids furries. That's all I'll say about that. Thank you all for watching. Have a good night, and I'll see you next time. Thank you all for joining me in this deep dive into the wild world of Warrior Cats. I know this is a pretty different video than I usually post. I had my face in it for a lot more than I usually do, but this video still took a long time to make because I read all of these books, and there was a period of time where I thought I could talk about all four seasons of Warrior Cats, but then the script was just way too long, and I thought season one was good enough on its own to be its own dedicated video. If you like this video, let me know, and I can do more Warrior Cat videos. Thank you all for watching. I hope you enjoyed, and wear your seatbelt. One time, me and a group of buddies were driving through Texas, and we passed a building that looked like the Whataburger corporate office. Just to be sure, I checked my phone and discovered, yeah, we did just drive past the Whataburger corporate office. But what I found interesting was that the building had hundreds of one-star reviews. After some investigation, I found that these reviews weren't coming from the Whataburger corporate staff. No, these reviews were from once loyal customers who in one way or another had a negative experience at a Whataburger and were going to take this issue to the top! Reading people's wordy laments about their terrible fast food experiences has become a hobby of mine.
And it's not just Whataburger. Every fast food corporate office has hundreds of one-star reviews. These people have been wronged by a billion-dollar company, and the only way they can get back at them is calling them stupid. The team at blah 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 have no intelligence whatsoever. I ordered 3 large lemonades, and all 3 spilled in the inside of my car because the cup holder was way too flimsy. I told the manager named Josh, and all he said he could do was say he's sorry. Sorry isn't going to clean up the mess caused by their stupidity! This guy spilled 3 lemonades all over his car, and instead of going, "Ah, I'm so stupid," he went, "Ah, Josh is stupid." This just goes to show that you could do your job perfectly and still have angry customers. Also, what did you expect Josh to do? Hey, I just spilled all that lemonade you gave me in that cup holder. Oh my goodness. How could I be so stupid? I forgot to turn off spill mode. Bring your car out back and I'll get a straw and then I'll suck it dry.
No need to thank me. That's what fast food employees are for.
I can't talk about fast food without bringing up a small local sandwich shop in my area. So here are some of my favorite one-star Subway reviews. We went to the location in blah blah blah. We had 30 minutes to close. I know, sucks, but there was a huge regional wrestling match and there were some starving boys. I walked in and let them know we had 20 sandwiches to order. We didn't have crazy expectations. Substituting meat, forget tomatoes if you're out. We don't need toasted, let's just feed these boys. 9 sandwiches in, the sweetest girl who was making our food said her manager said, "Shut it down," and they're not making the rest of the order. The manager had the employee in tears, and 9 boys didn't get food. I was mind blown. We offered big tips, gave free oil changes to employees working hard to make money. I run a mechanic shop and stay late for customer a lot. We didn't have crazy expectations. We just wanted a whole catering order 30 minutes before close. I know some people are going to be thinking, you're a business that's still open, so you have to do what the customer says. But I want those same people to ask their mother to make them 20 sandwiches at 9:30 p.m. and let me know what she says. And if those 9 boys were still upset, they should have just suplexed the manager into a table and then made the cold cut combo themselves. I placed an order online for 2 footlongs. I walked in to pick up my order, and I was thankful I didn't leave a tip. I received 1 footlong, but ordered 2. It's very clear on the receipt that was attached to the package. I showed it to the woman working behind the counter, and she laughed and said, "Oh, I didn't see that. Let me get that for you." Not sure why she missed that. Has never happened to me before. Is she on something, or does she not know how to read English? I had to stand there and wait for her to make the other footlong. And then this person continues to write a whole 500-word manifesto. Are they on drugs? Can they read English? Jeez. Do you think this reviewer is going to tell their grandkids about this story? And then I had to stand next to the sneeze guard for 2 minutes. Okay, Grandma, can we go? And they forgot the mayo! There are a whole bunch of lengthy reviews just like this. And for these types of reviews, I, like, start thinking about these people psychologically. I feel like these people either have something else going on or nothing else going on. I'm sorry that your lunch was ruined, but if this is the biggest problem in your life, you're doing all right. And maybe this wouldn't have happened if you left a tip. I went to the location at blah blah blah. The guy Frank there needs to take some customer service classes. He is not friendly, and when I told him he should be more friendly to his customers, he told me to go ahead and call whoever I wanted to complain. Frank, I love you. You don't need to take customer service classes. You need to be teaching them. IDK, who was working at around 9:45 on May 17th, but somebody needs to give them a hug. I pull up to the window to pay, and there was 3 girls standing there doing nothing. One of them mumbled my total and stuck out her hand. I gave her my card, and she did her thing. Then she handed me a crumpled mess of a bag and 2 drinks with, like, 0 ice. No have a nice night, no thanks for stopping in, not even a hello. IDK, if all 3 of those girls lives together and somebody ran over their dog or something, but all 3 of them looked like they absolutely hated being there, and me ordering my meal was the biggest inconvenience they could have experienced. I feel so bad for these workers, they need a hug, but also screw them 1 star. I can't believe this McDonald's took my review down, but that's okay, I will recite it. They had no barbecue sauce for their nuggets the whole Memorial Day weekend. For all you barbecue sauce lovers out there,
when you went to this location on any of those days and asked for barbecue sauce and you were told they didn't have any more, you must have felt crushed like I did. Like, what was the point of ordering nuggets and finding out they didn't have barbecue sauce afterwards? Why didn't they disclose that fact before ordering the nuggets and paying for it? I'll tell you why. Because they wanted to take advantage of us, just to get that sale. What, the employees do take the barbecue sauce to their homes to use for their own Memorial Day weekend barbecues? This is one memorable, unfavorable moment that will be remembered for years to come. You know, there are many who are barbecue sauce lovers out there that went through the same feeling I did when I ordered 3 20-piece nuggets just to find out afterwards they didn't have any barbecue sauce. Like, if you agree. I don't want to jump to any conclusions, but do you think they're out of barbecue sauce because the world's number one barbecue sauce lover keeps ordering there? Going through all the trouble to write a review and then recite the review again, all because they were out of barbecue sauce, seems like a lot. But 60 nuggets with no sauce on a national holiday is a tragedy, I'll give you that. I love that this guy didn't even consider that they were just out of sauce and instead went full conspiracy mode, thinking the employees were hoarding the sauce for their own barbecue. You gotta have barbecue sauce for your barbecue. It's in the name. I'm not going to act like every fast food restaurant is in the right all the time, because I've had my fair share of terrible fast food experiences too. I once ordered a burger from Sonic, and they gave me the burger with no meat. And I went, dang, well, that's how my day is gonna go, I guess. I didn't write a lengthy review to hopefully be seen by someone at corporate. I don't know. I got other problems. If reading these reviews has taught you anything, it's that these fast food workers have to deal with all sorts of customers going through all sorts of problems. So please be the customer who shows a little compassion. They are handling your food after all. Leave a like if you agree. My child works for Whataburger, hasn't been paid since December 2nd. Today is 1-4 and still no paychecks. We've been told lies saying paycheck is coming to the store, then FedEx is delivering it, and still nothing. He's only 18, so I feel like they're trying to get over on him. Not to mention the shift manager Liz is having an affair with some of the employees. Yo, what? A burger? Thank you all for watching the video. If you enjoyed it, then I highly recommend reading some of these corporate office fast food reviews yourself. They're a real treat to read. Just some of the passion that these people have needs to be studied. Obviously, not everyone who leaves a one-star review is an obnoxious Karen, but the ones who go out of their way to review a corporate office are some of my favorites. Thanks again for watching, and wear your seatbelt.
When you're watching any animated piece of media, I think it's easy to forget that you're watching drawings move. Excuse me? What kind of Harry Potter dark magic is this? Since when did drawings move? I drew a picture of a dog once, but it hasn't moved at all, not even to play fetch. Well, what you're really watching isn't actually moving. What you're really watching is a series of individual frames played at a rapid speed on a liquid crystal display screen that emit photons into your eyeball receptors that get processed by your brain into what it perceives as movement. It was all a trickery, you see. A ruse that you fell for hook, line, and sinker. Now, a lot of you probably already know about the concept of the frame rate, but what I want you to understand is that in cartoons, every head turn, every blink, everything that happens had to be meticulously drawn by a person who studied anatomy and knows about physics and movement, knowing full well that their drawing was only going to be seen for a fraction of a second. And you weren't even watching! You were on your phone! Today, I would like to turn back the sands of time and talk about some of the ways animators were able to achieve the illusion of life without the help of modern technology. I hope by watching you can better understand and appreciate the medium of animation as much as I do, because the amount of dedication and hard work that goes into just making drawings move is unreal. And if you're like me and already know a bit about animation history and find this kind of stuff fascinating, don't worry, I didn't have a lot of friends growing up either. Now, we know that animation is just copious amounts of drawings being shown in rapid succession. But how the fuck are we going to get people to look at copious amounts of drawings in rapid succession without a computer? Well, believe it or not, there's actually quite a few things we can do without even having to use a camera. One method we can try is by drawing out all of our frames on a stack of paper, I know that's the time-consuming part, but after we're done doing that, we'll hang up all our drawings side by side on a very long wall. Then we'll ride a bike next to the wall and continuously have our head turned facing the wall, and if we pedal fast enough, we'll zip by the drawings so fast that it'll look like they're moving.
Hey, look! It's a horse!
Okay, you're probably thinking, that's not how animation is made. And you're right. This method of animation is totally impractical, but not impossible. This type of human transportational animation has been done before in subway tunnels, with the results looking pretty legit. I mean, this minion looks like he's totally moving. I might as well be in the cinema. And for those of the gamer variety, YouTuber Pale of Pears was able to achieve this method of animation flawlessly in Minecraft. But if you wanted to do something more practical, you could instead take your drawings off the really long wall and then stack them up like a book and then just flip through the paper quickly, making a flip book. If you have some sticky notes lying around that you forgot about in a junk drawer somewhere, you can make a pretty simple ball bouncing animation really quickly, with the results being, you know, kind of cool. A fun fact, this type of animation was featured in every single copy of the Animorphs books, which I never read. I would just flip through the pages and watch the children in the corner transform into elephants and starfish and this weird blue alien centaur thing. And what the heck was going on in these books, man? Okay, this next method of showing people drawings in rapid succession is going to be a little bit crazy. I don't want to freak you out, but it's basically on the same level as rocket science, okay? We're going to have to jump up a whole dimension for this one. What you're going to do is sculpt out a three-dimensional figure of whatever you want to animate. Let's animate, I don't know, this guy jumping. So first, I'm going to sculpt my guy just standing there, just being a dude. This will be frame one. Now, okay, I know some of you are probably thinking, oh, I see where this is going. You're going to take a picture of the sculpture, then change its pose slightly, take a picture of that, and then slightly change the pose over and over while continuously starting and stopping the camera, making it seem like our subject has some sort of motion. No, actually, we're not going to be doing any of that. Cameras haven't been invented yet in this hypothetical. What we're doing instead is making a whole new sculpture that will be the next frame of our animation. So it'll be our guy again, bending his legs a little bit, getting ready for the jump. All right, neat. That's frame two. Now let's do this a total of, I don't know, 16 times? That sounds good. Let's also make the 16th sculpture look like it came before the first sculpture. So you understand, it's going to go from the 16th sculpture back to the first one. It's a loop, like a TikTok. We're doing a TikTok loop. Now we're going to take all 16 of our sculptures and space them out evenly on a round table. Sorry, Arthur, I'm going to need this. Now, make the table spin. That's on you to figure out how to do. I don't know. Maybe get the bike guy from the first example to pedal or something. I doubt any of you are actually following along, but if you are, put all your sculptures on a spinning table right now. And make it quick, all right? I'm not going to wait for you. And now, for the final step, turn your lights on and off really quickly. And if we did everything right, the effect we get is mesmerizing. What's happening is that the light shines at the first sculpture, and then we turn the lights off. Cool. Then, as the table spins, the light will turn back on when the second sculpture is in the same position as the first. So we turn the lights on when the sculptures are in the same spot, and we turn them off when they're not. And what we end up seeing is all of our figures standing in a circle performing the animation, and we don't even register that the whole thing is spinning. And congratulations, you all know what a zoetrope is now. Which, I know, is a pretty fun word that you can whip out at parties, like, yeah, I know a unique word that starts with the letter Z that isn't xylophone. Another fun thing about the zoetrope was that a 3D rendering of one was featured in the Season 2 opening of Mob Psycho 100. So that's what that spinning thing in the intro was. It was a zoetrope. Zoetrope. Okay, let's talk about one more way we can show people drawings in quick succession without a camera, and it's the easiest method by far. So all we need is this glitchy, abstract drawing like this. Pretty cool and random, right? Except it's not. It's not random at all. I lied. Every line here is placed very deliberately. Let me show you something. If we take this floppy, transparent sheet full of vertical bars and cover up most of the drawing, hey, look at that. The outline we end up seeing looks like one of them kitty cats. Now, if we slide the transparent sheet over and reveal different parts of the drawing, it looks like a kitty cat put in a different position. And if we keep sliding the sheet over, revealing different parts of the drawing, look at him go! This is called a barrier grid animation, and with the right base drawing, you can make all sorts of animations that don't hurt to look at all. And also, I just want to point out that a barrier grid animation was also featured in the Season 2 opening of Mob Psycho 100. Hey, do you guys want to watch anime later? So all these different methods of showing people drawings in quick succession, I don't know if there's a word for it, but I'm calling it physical animation. Like animation you can hold and touch with your fingers, you know? All those warrior cat animation memes, that's digital animation, right? This is physical. It's the real deal. But there's one form of physical animation that we haven't talked about yet that's unarguably the most popular and the most important form of physical animation to have ever existed on Earth. Excuse me. Okay, now we're gonna use cameras. Okay, they finally figured it out. With the invention of film, showing people multiple images in quick succession had never been easier. Now we can take something from real life, burn an image of that into a film strip, process it, and then shine a light through it again to get a recreation of the image. And if we roll this whole strip of film over this strobe light, we get moving pictures. That's why they're called movies, because they move. What the fuck? A lot of times, film was used to capture the movements of real people, but it was also used in the same way to capture the movements of people of the animated variety. Let's take a look at an old cartoon. The 1968 animated Batman series. The first time Batman has ever appeared in the animation form. You know, the really, really old Batman cartoon that had onomatopoeias appear on the screen during fight scenes? Boom! Pow! Ka-chow! Except they didn't! They didn't do that in the cartoon. Visually showing the verbiage of impacts was exclusively an Adam West thing. In the cartoon, you gotta see those impacts! Hey, can I ask you a thought-provoking question? What the f*** am I looking at? I know it's Batman high-kicking a goon, but how is it moving? This frame was captured on film, so there had to be a physical camera to capture it, right? So where is this drawing? It's not on a computer. Computers in the 60s looked like this. So where is this? So every animated movie and animated TV show and animated anime before the year 2000-ish, used what's called cell animation. This frame of Batman was hand-painted, that's right, painted, with special paint onto a transparent celluloid sheet, or cell. And then this transparent sheet was laid on top of a hand-painted background, and then this goon that got kicked, well, he had to be painted on his own cell sheet too, and then this image of sandwiched art was captured onto a film thing, strip, shit. Then the Batman cell would come off and be replaced by a whole new hand-painted cell of Batman, and then that frame would be captured, and then the whole process would repeat again and again until the shot was done. This one shot that lasted a little over a second used 14 different hand-painted drawings of Batman, and the goon had 6, just for a second. Now, because having to hand-paint 20 different images for 1 second is insane, there are some things we can do to cut corners without having to sacrifice too much quality. Like in this shot, Robin takes 5 frames to turn his head, but his body doesn't move, so we can paint his body once on its own cell, and now we only need to paint 5 different heads. And since we already have all the frames painted, we can just use the same frames in reverse to make his head turn the other way. And you don't need to pay a background artist to paint a background if you just use blue. A big part of cell animation was being able to animate pieces of a character independently of each other. That's actually why so many old cartoon characters had accessories around their necks, so the animators could separate the characters' heads from their bodies, making it easier to animate. Fred wasn't rocking that ascot just because it was trendy. One of the nice things about using a computer to animate is that you can play back what you've animated and clearly see if your timing is correct and if there's any quick adjustments you can make. Being able to see what your previous frames are is so important there's actually a term for it called onion skinning. But animators pre-2K didn't have computers to rewatch their work, so here's what they did instead. Before they even put paint onto a cell, they first had to draw all their frames out onto a piece of paper. And they didn't work on the frames in chronological order. Like, they didn't go, okay, I just drew the first frame of Batman. Okay, here's the second frame of Batman. Okay, I'm gonna go do the third frame of Batman. Okay, you do the fourth frame, though. That way of animating is called straight-ahead animation, and some people use it, but the results look pretty chaotic, but it's still used pretty effectively for effects and concert visuals. But most of the time, animators will animate a character from pose to pose. They'll draw out all the important key poses a character will make on paper, and then they'll hold the pieces of paper between each of their fingers, and then quickly flip between their drawings just to get an idea of what a drawing that goes in between those key poses would look like. That's called in-betweening, just so you know. And they still wouldn't be able to get a full playback of their animation until every pencil drawing was captured on film and processed. They just had to trust their page-flipping technique and their highly trained eyeballs and go, yeah, that looks about right. Let's bring out the paint! And because there are hundreds of shots all having to be animated without a computer, can you really blame the animators that some shots of Batman looked like this? Or this? It was old, remember? Old things are bad. Okay, I kind of have a secret. Remember when I said, let's look at an old, old cartoon? Well, I might have overemphasized how old the Batman cartoon is. By the time the Batman cartoon came out, the movie Bambi had been out for 25 years. And are you aware of how f***ing fluid the animation in Bambi is? Dude, Bambi goes so f***ing hard. Walt literally brought in deer from the woods into their studio just so the animators could be like, oh, that's neat, that's how deers move. I understand this more now. What the f***? I honestly thought the Batman show came out way earlier in the animation timeline because of how it looked. Obviously, these two things were created by different studios with different animators and different budgets, and TV animation always has to create more animation per budget, but all the same techniques and equipment used to make an episode of Batman were the exact same techniques and equipment used to make an episode of Bambi. I don't mean that as a dunk on Batman. I'm more so impressed with how amazing Bambi looks, especially since while it came out, World War II was currently happening. So because celluloid sheets were used to animate every TV show, movie, and anime there has ever been before the year 2000-ish, by my calculations, there are millions of cell sheets out there. Like this single frame of Batman kicking, it's on a cell sheet somewhere. And more importantly, who owns it? Many of the cells that still exist have been sold to the general public. But because of how the paint and time works, cell sheets need to be kept very well preserved. So since cells are very hard to preserve, and because they're not making any new ones, some cells are worth a lot of money. This cell and original background from My Neighbor Totoro sold for $84,000. While I'm writing the script, there's currently an auction going on for this cell from The Jungle Book for $10,000. And I own this cell of Squidward Laughing that I got at a convention for $300. It's not an original background. The background's a print, and it's actually not even the correct background for the shot. But I'm just pointing out that not all cells are thousands of dollars. You know, they made millions of these. So you can get a cell from a TV show for a couple hundred. And then you get to own a frame of animation. Like, that belongs to you now. Which I think is super cool. This moment of Squidward laughing belongs to me. And you can't have it. So if you ever visit some friends who really like cartoons, there's a good chance that they have an animation cell somewhere on display. And those are just a handful of ways that animators were able to achieve the illusion of life without a computer. And I do just want to say, just because something was animated on a computer doesn't make it any less artistic. Yes, computers make the process easier and more streamlined, absolutely. It's still a human expressing their creativity and being in control of that. Did you hear me? It's a human expressing themselves and being in control creatively. I hope you enjoyed learning a bit about animation history. There's still quite a few things that I didn't get to cover, like how did Walt animate this panning, parallaxing shot of Bambi where the trees move on separate layers? What kind of technology did they create to make trees move at different speeds? So much hard work and talent is involved in every piece of animation you see, and because of animation, we're able to tell incredible stories that are nothing like anything we ever see in our day-to-day lives. And before I go, can we talk about the intro to the Batman series, please? Oh my god! I just want to go over some quick announcements. I'll be quick, don't worry. The Scribble Showdown Tour is coming back in January to a city near you, but this time the kiddies aren't invited. That's right, only the adults this time. Leave the children at home with the babysitter. If you're like me and are behind on your Christmas shopping, there's some new holiday merch in the merch store, so check it out. But if the shipping won't get there in time, then there's also the Oddballs graphic novel available in retail stores like Target and Barnes & Noble and Walmart. I'll probably see you all in the new year, so happy new year. Thank you.
My dear friends, we are the Sowers of Chaos, the Lords of Destruction, the Four Horsemen, Plague, Famine, War. I send unto ye this formal invitation that we gather together once more for the 1000th annual Boys' Night!
Oh, I got a bunch of fun activities planned for this year, boys. Woo! It's gonna be buckets of fun, guys. Buckets.
We are all tired of your meaningless gatherings.
What?
You don't take the responsibilities of being a horseman seriously. You've gone soft.
I'm not soft. I kill people all the time. Did you see what I did to the queen?
Oh, yeah. You mean the 96-year-old whose death you kept delaying? That queen?
Yeah. I told you, Famine, I was busy in 2012.
Do you realize how long it's been since we've started an apocalypse?
Yeah, when was the last time you did something notable?
I... Ah! Oh my god! Oh no, I just killed James!
Whoa, you killed James? He's the catalyst that holds the very fabric of reality together!
Oh, is that so?
Killing him will destroy the world as we know it. Now that's an apocalypse, baby! Okay, looks like Boys' Night is back on. See you tonight, Death. You better not flake.
Oh... Life, I need a big favor. It's an emergency.
Oh, sure. Anything for my favorite pessimistic counterpart.
Can you bring this thing back to life?
Is that James? Oh, my stars, what happened to him?
I found him like this.
Well, it's good that I know just the thing to bring a soul back from the spirit realm. All we have to do is... The ritual.
Oh, the ritual? That sounds a little off-brand for you, don't you think?
What do you mean? What sounds off-brand about the ritual?
Okay, you're making it seem like this is a dark and scary thing, but knowing you, this is going to be something to do with lemons, isn't it?
Death. Restoring someone's soul takes a lot more work than destroying it. The ritual is not something to be taken lightly. I need to have your full commitment on this.
Okay, fine. Yes, what do we need for the ritual? What exactly is the ritual?
Don't worry, we're almost done. You want a lemon cookie?
Oh, please and thank you.
Hey, Death. You sure you haven't gone soft?
Yeah. And what's that on your head?
Death? Are these your friends? Hey, howdy, I'm Life. before doing anything fun?
We're going to commence an apocalypse and unleash total chaos upon the Earth.
Whoa!
Okay, let's pump the brakes there a little bit. But I love the enthusiasm. What if instead we all wore face paint and talked about our feelings?
Face paint? And do what? Have a picnic like a weenie? Come on, Death, you really want to hang out with this clown?
No.
Let's do something actually fun. With your real friends?
Yeah, I mean, you guys are my real buds. I love when we all sit around and say mean things that are sometimes directed at me.
You're the one who wanted to have Boys Night to start the apocalypse, remember?
Right. I didn't even want to have a picnic.
So, we won't be needing him anymore. Let the apocalypse begin! Now this is a bucket of fun! Sure thing, buddy!
Anymore. I'm calling off the apocalypse.
Now, why would you say something like that?
Because I like life, okay?
You do?
No, like living life. I like going to cafes and eating ice cream and doing stupid activities with my stupid friends. I like hanging out with you and meeting new people and trying new things, but I can't do any of that if I'm just killing people all the time.
Oh, Death, I like doing stupid things with you too. The ritual is now complete.
Huh? It's all fixed? But what about James?
James isn't a person, silly. He's a YouTuber. And as long as we keep believing in him, he'll live on. In here. In our rib cage.
That doesn't make any sense.
Who cares?
Yeah. Thanks, life.
Aw, you're welcome, buddy. So, I heard tonight is boys' night. And I know exactly what we can do.
You were right about life, Death. This is more fun than starting an apocalypse. And I can still scream at kids and say whatever I want.
Yep, this is what life's all about, you know? Eating snacks and playing first-person shooters with your bros.
Oh, hey, I hope you boys don't mind, but I invited some of my friends over. Everyone, this is Peace, Prosperity, and Plenty.
Are you guys ready to get wrecked?
I hope you have a skeleton of fun this spooky season. Seems like I have some tricky treats for you to bring home. Wait a tick. Is that me? And everything glows in the dark? Oh, I didn't even know I could do that. If for some reason you don't want me on your bedroom shelf watching you while you sleep, you can have me on your body. I'm on hoodies, pins, and stickers. Thanks again for being a bona fide group of cool kids, and if you want a chance to meet me, don't wear your seatbelt. Happy Halloween!
This brick is alive. Not convinced? Well, what if I did this?
I'm gonna do a backflip!
That's gonna look so cool, Brickathy!
What are you boys doing?
Brickathy's gonna do a backflip, Grandma!
Are you convinced now? Did the brick feel more alive? I mean, sure, it's still a brick that can't move on its own, but maybe because I put googly eyes on it and gave it a family, you can connect with this brick, and it made you feel emotions. Convincing you that something inanimate is animate is the main goal of the Animate Ore. They're nothing more than deranged frauds. For the last century, animators have innovated new techniques and styles to this medium, taking it from a spinning wheel that doesn't even use electricity to Spider-Verse. And today, I'm going to talk about all the processes and innovations that have brought the medium of animation to right now. But first, let's go all the way back to the beginning of film, when it was all black and white and people had to put up text whenever they talked. Early on, filmmakers discovered a very simple trick to make anything appear alive in front of a camera. And that simple trick was called... If you're filming something and then stop the camera and then move the thing slightly, capture a new image, move the thing again, and continue to do that a tedious amount of times, on the film, that thing now magically looked like it move on its own. And with this technique, you could make literally anything appear to be moving. Anything. But some filmmakers took this art form to an extreme level and created whole characters out of clay and a posable metal wire system called an armature. Now animators can sculpt unique characters that bend and pose in much more believable ways. With stop motion, you don't need to hire a real dinosaur or giant monkey to make a movie about a dinosaur or giant monkey. I'm sorry you didn't get the job, Phil. You know, I just had a crazy idea. What if we made our entire puppet's head interchangeable? Now they can make any facial expression and mouth shape possible. We will have to sculpt out hundreds of different heads, though, but, I mean, come on, that'll be fun. That's why we're extreme, baby! Stop-motion movies are still being made and enjoyed to this day, and while new technology does help make the overall process easier, animators are still using the same techniques that were used on King Kong back in the 1920s, where they carefully pose out a character's every movement frame by frame. In order. Stop motion is a medium that I can't even begin to understand how they do, let alone make it look good, you know? Having a stop motion character in gravity-defying poses, making hundreds of different faces, is done solely to make the character feel more alive. And sometimes, to help sell the realism, animators will mimic quirks that only happen in live-action films. I always chuckle when I see a lens flare in an animated movie, because, like, where did you come from? There's not even a camera lens. Unlike me, though, who's always got a camera rolling. Hey, how's it going? Uh-oh. Oh, no! Did you catch that? Did you see the lizard eating a bug? Ooh, we got him. Now let's rewind the clip and pause right here. This lizard moves so fast that the camera can't even capture its movements correctly, and he transmogrifies into an amorphic blob that barely even resembles a lizard. But do not fret, dear viewer. This is called motion blur, and it's absolutely natural. Fast-moving objects are hard to see in real life anyway, so this blurry blob only showing up for one frame actually helps sell the idea that this little guy is moving quickly. If you watch any movie frame by frame, you'll find motion blur everywhere, and you won't even notice. So how do animators who are taking hundreds of still photos handle this naturally occurring phenomenon with things in motion? Easy, they'll draw smear. Animators draw their own blurry blob frame to mimic fast movements. Bodies can stretch, arms can multiply. Basically, we can sneak in nightmares as long as it's only shown for one frame. Smears, while being very fun to draw, can look very weird and goofy on their own. But in the context of the whole shot, you barely even notice they're there. Okay, maybe now you'll notice them, but that's only because I pointed them out. And since animators are bad boys and don't play by the rules, they can make smears out of anything. Even in stop motion, we can sculpt a physical smear frame like how they did in Laika's Paranorman, which, if you haven't seen, is going to be your new favorite movie. Smear frames can be used anytime, anywhere. Unless you were an animator in the 1920s and 30s and you didn't know about them back then. In that case, you would have been animating something called... In the 1920s and 30s, animators were still figuring out some core principles of animation. Turns out there's 12 of them. Smear frames were used sparingly during this time, with animators usually only drawing characters with multiple limbs to show fast movements. The stretchy, wacky, and spiritually ascending smears that you all know and love weren't really used until the 1940s. Rubber hose characters have noodly, almost hose-like limbs that bend in all sorts of anatomically defying ways. Look at Mickey Mouse's noodle arms that I can now legally show you. The reason characters look like this is because drawing noodle arms and not worrying about anatomy is easier to draw. But like, just because something has noodle arms doesn't mean it's bad, you guys. What these animators were able to accomplish with the technology, if you could even call it that, is nothing short of dark magic. And the very same studio that made Steamboat Willie wanted to push the envelope and show the world that animation could be more. It doesn't just have to be noodly characters with Pac-Man eyes. They were going to animate a realistic woman with proportional arms that don't move in weird, exaggerated ways. And oh god, her noodle arms are moving in weird, exaggerated ways. In 1934, Disney released a short called The Goddess of Spring, being their first attempt at animating a character with what was supposed to have real human anatomy. They still had a lot to learn, obviously. Now, animating a quote-unquote anatomically correct human is actually a much harder task than you might realize, and that's because of the uncanny valley. Get more and more human characteristics, we hit an interesting point right here when something looks almost like a human, but is just a little off. Our pattern recognition brains start setting off alarm bells and go, ugh, something is definitely wrong with that almost human. I am entering fight or flight right now. So if you're trying to make something look as close to a human as possible, but are just a tiny bit off, everything crumbles. The Goddess of Spring was still good practice for Disney because only 3 years later, they released the world's first fully animated feature film, Snow White. Can you really blame Disney for going 6 times over budget to make this movie? I mean, just look at how these human characters are moving. 10 years before Snow White, animated humans looked like this. So going from this to this in only 10 years? How? I can't get over how real these human characters look sometimes. Almost too real. Well, I think you're old enough to learn about the dangers of rotoscoping is the process of taking real-life footage and then manually tracing over every frame, resulting in an animation with unreal levels of realism. And I say unreal derogatorily. You're basically slapping a cartoon filter over live-action footage, but instead of simply slapping, you're spending multiple hours doing mindless and tedious drawing. Rotoscoping is not the same as filming a human actor and then later referencing that footage, like what Disney did for Sleeping Beauty or Alice in Wonderland or any movie ever, because animators use references all the time. People had figured out how to rotoscope other people long before Snow White. So of course Disney, who was trying to convey real human movement, rotoscoped some shots. The problem with rotoscoping is that we start to sneak our way back to the bottom of the uncanny valley. Animated characters often do and should break the laws of physics. They can squash and stretch into weird proportions and be drawn in unique and interesting poses. And look, Snow White is still a masterpiece of a movie. The rotoscoping is fine, you barely notice it. It's good, it's a good movie, and it made Disney a lot of money. Also, how did Walt animate these shots of things reflecting in the water in 1937? What, did they put special glass over paintings to make it look distorted or something? Who would be crazy enough to do that? If you made a whole movie entirely rotoscoped, what you end up with is Ralph Bakshi's The Lord of the Rings. Notice anything off about these characters' movements? Look at how Gandalf moved just a year ago in The Hobbit. Now, Lord of the Rings. Hobbit. Lord of the Rings. Almost every shot in this movie was rotoscoped, and the shots that weren't used live-action footage with a filter over it. I'm not saying that rotoscoping is bad. You just have to use it correctly. A character switching from traditionally animated to rotoscoped is incredibly funny, and always will be. The YouTuber Joel Havier makes very entertaining rotoscope skits that feel like a fever dream, and I mean that underogatorily. And a lot of music videos get away with rotoscoping because, admittedly, rotoscoping is a very cool visual. Now, I wish I could say the first Lord of the Rings movie was a hidden animation gem, but I don't know, it's not on my top 10, I'm sorry. It probably made a lot of nerds in the 70s happy, but thankfully The Lord of the Rings has been adapted into many other forms of media, like video games, Magic the Gathering cards, and anime.
Anime?
They're making a Lord of the Rings anime?
They're making a Lord of the Rings...
You thought Hollywood, California was the only place in the world making moving pictures? Japan's been making their own moving pictures too, and some of them are moving drawings. There are entire college courses on the history of anime, but you're not paying me tuition, so we're gonna have to skip over a couple things. A lot of early anime is now lost media because cinemas didn't preserve film back then, and an earthquake destroyed many studios in 1923. Some Japanese animators created shorts out of paper cutouts because buying thousands of celluloid sheets was too expensive, and they had some very unique character designs. And some Japanese animators took inspiration from Disney and made shorts that looked very similar to America's rubber hose characters. Then, by the 1940s, some major world events happened that got most of the world involved, and both American and Japanese animation studios were affected. But after all that, in 1948, one studio called Japan Animated Films, later bought out by Toei Animation, set out to be the Disney of the East, and they made cartoons about magical schoolgirls, and are still in business to this day and made some other less popular shows. One animator who quit working at Toei created his own company and made an anime based off his comic about a robot boy. Hey, I kind of like that art style of drawing humans with big expressive eyes. Let's do more of that. That same year, another studio made an anime about humans controlling giant robots. I wonder if that's going to inspire a whole new genre. And this guy was commissioned by American studios to make stop-motion Christmas movies like Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. Meaning Rudolph is anime.
Nani?
By the 1960s, Japanese shows started airing on televisions all across the globe, and they continued to make unique and interesting stories with amazing animations that were beloved by billions of people and grew into extremely profitable franchises. Like, I'm talking the most profitable franchise. By the 1970s, Disney was still very much the animated movie gold standard, making big-budgeted movies with family-friendly values. Which is fine to do, kids love bright colors and talking animals that only cartoons can offer, but some studios realized that animation was a medium, not a genre, and made animated movies exclusively for adults. That's part of the reason why the first Lord of the Rings movie was entirely rotoscoped. It wasn't trying to be cartoony and over the top, it was trying to be real and gritty. Animation could be anything for anyone of any age. But really, if you think about it, there hadn't been a new way of showing people moving drawings since those very early days of black and white stop motion. In stop motion, you take a picture, move a figure, take a picture, move a figure. In cell animation, you take a picture, move a cell, take a picture, move a cell. Everything's just been a series of pictures moved manually in front of a camera this whole time? Always has been.
You've got mail.
Oh. It says the entire animation and film industry is about to be flipped onto its head forever and ever. Yeah, right. I'm sure this whole computer thing is just... ever-increasing advancements of technology, we were able to achieve increasingly advanced... achievements, like putting a guy on the moon, and drawing silly little cartoons more efficiently. Gone are the days of having to physically draw everything out on paper and underpay a team of hundreds of pretty girls to hand-paint every frame. Now we can use this fancy new computer to render everything out for us. All we have to do is create a real-life mold of our real-life human hand, then draw 350 triangles onto that hand, then manually measure out the X, Y, and Z coordinates of 800 different data points. No, come on, this is gonna be so much faster. Put that pencil down. Now we just program in a couple of keyframes and we get... Huh. We still don't have the processing power to render everything out. Oh, I know! We'll just point this long exposure camera at the computer screen. Get these art supplies out of here. This is the future. And when everything's finished rendering, we'll get this! A whole human hand moving on its own without having to draw a single frame. This process is exactly what Utah University student Ed Catmull did in 1972. And while it might not have been more efficient than drawing everything out by hand, it showed that computers were capable of rendering out three-dimensional animations. This was made after we landed a man on the moon, by the way, so don't tell me this was CGI. As the computer's processing power grew exponentially, more and more filmmakers started seeing the benefits of using computer-generated images in movies. A decade after Catmull Atmel digitized his hand, films like Tron showcased characters racing on mind-boggling computer-generated light cycles. This might look, you know, bad by today's standards, but these graphics were something that audiences had never seen before. Plus, the movie takes place inside of a computer, so this is probably what people thought the insides of a computer looked like anyways. At the time, computers did a great job at creating rigid, geometric shapes, and animators used that to their advantage. Characters would still have to be animated traditionally on cells, but objects that weren't going to change shape, like black cauldrons, could now magically fly in circles around our characters. Disney really showed off the computer's rendering power during the climax of The Great Mouse Detective, when these two rodents fought each other inside a clock tower and all the spinning gears were generated by a computer. Animators can now make any complex shape move in a three-dimensional space without having to draw a single frame. I mean, you know, except for the characters, they still very much had to draw those. Computer graphics were here to stay as Disney integrated more of them into movies like these Cars in Oliver and Company or Eric's ship in The Little Mermaid, and then they stopped using cells entirely. Starting with The Rescuers Down Under, Disney no longer used cells and made movies entirely digitally with a program called CAPS. So if you ever wanted to own a cell of Joanna the Lizard eating an egg, that's too bad because they don't exist, which fucking sucks because Joanna was the best goddamn lizard Disney ever made. Don't touch me! TV shows and anime still use cells till about the year 2000-ish, but eventually everyone switched to digital. Now to color a frame, all you had to do was... So computers were great at making rigid, non-flexible shapes, but has anyone ever tried to make... A group of computer scientists who were working for a small indie director named George Lucas were taking this art form to an extreme level and created whole characters completely generated by a computer. Then a small entrepreneur named Steve Jobs hired those computer scientists and made his own company, Pixar. Yes, Steve Jobs was one of the founders of Pixar, and he originally created the company to sell a high-end computer powerful enough to render 3D animations, but no one bought the computer because it cost $135,000. So the team scrapped the computer selling idea and just stuck with making computer-generated cartoons, but they soon discovered a unique problem. The computer had a hard time getting textures right, and everything, including babies, ended up looking like it was made out of plastic. So the team's clever workaround this dilemma was to make a movie with the entire cast of characters actually made out of plastic. Or ants. You know, people don't know what ants are supposed to look like. It's fine. Pixar continued to develop new processes to get the computer to generate unique textures and lighting, like simulating human hair or fur, or lighting things in such a way to make everything appear underwater. No other studio was pioneering computer-generated images like Pixar was. And then in 2006, Disney bought Pixar. But I don't think Steve was too upset because 1 year later, he achieved his dream of selling a high-end computer. This time being a little more affordable. A little. Now, I want to squash any misconception that computers do all the animating. Animators still have to manually pose a character's body and facial expression off of a character's... build a complex system of nodes and bones that let them manually pose a character into any position possible. It's kind of like a digital stop-motion puppet, or an actual puppet without any of the strings. All CG characters are just their own complicated version of Pinocchio. Using character rigs is really the only way of animating things in three dimensions. But it's not like we can use rigs in 2D animation. Here in the second dimension, we don't have a fancy Z-axis. 2D animation can only be done by hand-drawing 24 new images every second. Except we don't, I lied. Even all the way back when characters were animated with paper and cells, animators wouldn't draw a whole new frame every frame. Usually, they would animate pieces of a character and paint each piece on its own cell. You remember Robin, they only drew one body and five different heads. But because cells are a physical object that get harder to handle the more you have, animators could only break a character up into two or three different pieces. But now, thanks to the computer, we can break up a character into as many pieces as we'd like four, or five, or 173! Have you ever played around with the free and revolutionary animation software Pivot Stick Figure Animator? If you're the type of person that says, "Oh, I suck at drawing. I can't even draw stick figures," then you're gonna love this program. On Pivot, you're given a pre-made stick figure or horse that have these joints that can be posed however you like. Each of these stick figure's limbs are just individual pieces that are connected in such a way that make it look like a stick figure. So to make these animations, we're not really drawing anything, we're just manually posing out a character like a digital puppeteer. I wasn't saying you can make a rig out of 173 pieces just to be funny, because that's how many pieces I'm made out of. That's right, me! Even I'm a rig! And can I tell you a secret? Most TV shows use rigs too. Of course, hand-drawn traditional animation is still used to make these shows. It's not a lost art form or anything. But rigs are super useful at making still pretty high-quality levels of animation, but at a much cheaper cost. And as we all know, TV animation has to create more animation per budget. But maybe rig animation still isn't as cost-effective as you'd like. And maybe you're not a fan of the complicated puppet look, and you want something that looks more human. Well, there's one more animation process we can try, called motion. An actor inside one of these dorky ping pong suits, a computer can pinpoint and record that actor's exact movements. Now we can take those movements, slap a cartoon character's model over it, and we get an animation that looks like shit. Motion capture is the rotoscoping of 3D animation. It cuts costs, but the results are too human, and we're back at the bottom of the uncanny valley. That's why the kids from the Polar Express look so nightmarish, because they are following the exact movements of Tom Hanks. Yes, Tom Hanks, the adult man, did some motion capture for the small, nameless hero boy from the Polar Express. There's probably a reason we haven't made a fully motion capture cartoon in over 10 years. Because it looks weird. But I mean, that didn't stop one of these movies from winning an Oscar in animation. And before you ask, no, it wasn't Monster House or Tintin. It was Mars Needs Moms. Duh. Just like rotoscoping, motion capture can be used correctly. Computer-generated characters acting side-by-side real human actors look decent. It's not that jarring that these creatures who exist in a live-action world are moving just like live-action people. And let's not forget all the VTubers who use motion capture technology to bring their jiggly assets to life. No matter what method someone uses to try and convince you that something else is alive, I think is incredibly cool, and I hope you think it's cool too. But maybe you don't think it's cool, and you don't care about animation, and you just put this video on in the background while you were cleaning. That's totally fine, I do that all the time. I just like learning about how all my favorite animated pieces of media get created, because it's not always the same process. And I think it's great that new technology is allowing anyone to express themselves in whatever way possible. A person expressing themselves. Those are the three key words here. From the big studios that are just now pioneering new and interesting styles with digital animation, to the indie studios that have access to incredible technology which allow anyone working from their bedrooms in their pajamas to create some truly masterpieces of animation. So, if you're the type of person that likes to trick people into thinking that something is alive, then you deserve all the respect in the world. In fact, here are some cool people that made the animation in this video possible. Hello, you just made it to the end of this video. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm still trying to figure out this VTuber model, so I'm over-enunciating my words. The technology behind this is beyond my comprehension. If you're still deciding what to get for the holidays, then great news. We have mystery boxes over on my website, so you can leave the deciding up to us. Now, if you'll excuse me, I'm gonna go take a nap. Are you still watching? Oh yeah, she's coming back.
Using right that there. Jab to paw, boom. Looking for the right time for that right...
Yeah, that's me. You're probably wondering how I got in this situation. What's that? You're not wondering? This is just the natural life cycle of YouTubers, is what you're thinking? Well, why did I decide to participate in iDubbbz's Creator Clash charity boxing event where some ripped Australian guy was going to punch me in front of everyone I ever loved? On my birthday! And I wasn't even getting paid to get punched in the head! Well, I used to always be the skinny kid growing up. Not because I was eating healthy, no, I was eating nothing. I would see all the healthy food in the fridge at home and go, aw, dang. There's nothing to eat! It wasn't until March of 2020 that I started exercising more seriously. There wasn't a lot else to do during that time, if you know what I mean. I have a really buff friend, DJ Welch, who you might know as the beefiest guy in Creator Clash. We got into a Discord call one day, and he showed me how to exercise, and we liked each other so much that we continued to work out virtually 3 times a week. And I learned a really good life hack to keep a consistent workout schedule, which is to have a gym partner. Especially one that's more experienced and knows what they're doing, and between sets you can compliment his muscles completely platonically. When you're working out by yourself, it's so easy to think, my feet hurt. I don't want to work out. I want to binge all 12 seasons of The Big Bang Theory and not laugh at all. But if you have someone waiting for you at the gym, expecting you to lift weights with them, you're not going to flake as much. Plus, you get to look at muscles in the gym platonically. Sometimes you have to search for opportunities. And sometimes Ian from the channel iDubbbz drops into your DMs and asks, hey, want to get in a fight? With a bunch of other YouTubers? Completely platonically? It was probably the fact that I had been working out for quite some time, mixed with ignorance of what I was actually signing up for, that I, without any hesitation, was immediately on board with the idea and responded in all caps, YES! I've actually been working out! I was going to be fighting an Australian YouTuber named I Did A Thing, which is such a stupid username. His whole username is made up of 4 one-syllable words. That's like a whole sentence. Dude's got a whole sentence in his username. I didn't have any information on I Did A Thing. While most fighters got to actually meet their opponents and go on their podcasts, I had to stalk my opponent's Twitter for any information I could use. Aha! A clue! He says in this tweet that he's 6'4". I'm in trouble. But at least I Did A Thing had even less information about me. Try finding a recent picture of what I look like in 2022, Alex. Google says I'm 5'9 for some reason, which now that I think about it, that would make our fight seem way more stacked in his favor. So yeah, I'm totally 5'9 and not 6 foot. Yeah, I Did A Thing was clobbering on a slightly taller Michael Reeves. I told DJ, hey, I'm going to be in a boxing match. Good thing I'm starting to put on muscle. And DJ said, oh, no, what we've been working on won't help you in boxing whatsoever. What? So-ever? So Ian found me a boxing coach named Michael Flores, who's a 4 times Emmy-nominated belt holder and a total bro. I started training in January with the fight happening in May, and even though the final results may not have looked like it, I did train hard for this and took it very seriously. Michael wanted me to train every single day except for Sunday, and DJ could have me on Fridays.
DJ, Michael's gonna be my new gym bro, bro. Bro, I'm gonna miss lifting with you, bro.
The very first time I trained with Michael, he told me, boxing isn't something that you should take lightly. When you step into that ring, you're going to war. And I said, oh, yeah, dude, don't worry. I work out. I know all about war, like a lot. But it wasn't until my 3rd training session where it actually hit me. Huh. I'm going to be fighting I Did A Thing in front of all my fans and loved ones and will have an incredible amount of motivation not to lose and look bad. And I Did A Thing will be fighting me in front of all of his fans and loved ones and will also have an incredible amount of motivation not to lose and look bad. This is probably what Michael was talking about. And this is where I learned another amazing workout life hack. If you need motivation to get in shape, pay someone in Australia to come beat you up on your birthday. You'll tell yourself, am I really not going to go on a run today when there's a dude in Australia who wants to beat me up? Am I really going to eat this cupcake when a dude in Australia wants to punch me in the solar plex? In February, Ian tweeted out, looking for a heavyweight content creator, 200 plus pounds, who is down to box. Last spot available, you will be fighting a legendary Twitch streamer. And in March, DJ messaged me, hey, is Ian still looking for someone? And it turned out he was still looking for someone, so in April, DJ got added to the roster, and me and him are reunited. So DJ had about a month and a half to train, which was a little less than me, but I think he turned out fine.
Oh, it's coming forward. He goes down.
Since none of us were professional boxers, that meant this was a brand new and frankly bat-crap crazy experience that we were all facing together. Every single fighter trained hard for months, and we all respected the gosh darn hell out of each other. The level of camaraderie at this event was insane. And platonic.
None of the fighters had any real beef with each other, except Dad, maybe? I don't know, it's hard to get a read on that guy. Whenever a fighter was done with their match and they returned to their locker room, regardless if they just won or lost the fight, everyone would applaud them and tell them good job. At least that was the blue corner. I don't know what the red corner was doing. So, let's talk about my fight. If you can call it that. There are a surprising amount of strategy and fundamentals in the sport of boxing, but the moment that that bell rings and there's a dude from Australia trying to kill you mixed with the most adrenaline you've ever felt in your life, all those fundamentals go out the window. I lasted 0.74 rounds. I wish I could tell you about all the intricate strategies that played out in my head, but the only thoughts I had during the fight were survive, survive, survive. Ow. Where am I? After months of work and literal gallons of sweat later, I only lasted for a minute and a half, which actually isn't too far off from what it's like working in animation. I had a few notes on my performance, like I definitely should have moved my head better. And yeah, I got hit in the head a lot, but I did get Alex with this nice body shot and he did this weird spinning move, and then I just watched him do it for some reason. It is what it is. Half of us had to lose, and I lost. And now there exists some amazing gifts of me getting socked in the head. These are going to outlive me. At the end of it all, I'm still extremely glad to have been a part of this. Not only did the event raise
$1.3 million
for
Alzheimer's Association,
but I also went out of my comfort zone and challenged myself. Even though I got my butt handed to me, the journey was worth it. You don't grow as a person by winning all the time. You have to lose in order to get stronger. I didn't think I'd ever say this, but I still want to continue boxing training, just without the looming threat of a chiseled kangaroo beating me up on my birthday. I have a much deeper appreciation for the sport of boxing and anyone who is brave enough to step into the ring. And if this was the first boxing show you ever watched, I hope you enjoyed it. And if you're thinking about putting some gloves on and giving boxing a try, then I totally recommend it. Hitting things is a whole lot of fun. I want to thank my coach, Michael Flores, who's an amazing guy and always pushed me to do my best, even after I lost. I want to thank DJ, who's been an amazing virtual workout partner, and I probably wouldn't have even had the confidence to participate if it wasn't for him. I want to thank my girlfriend, who got me my custom outfit for my birthday and supported me through all my training. I want to thank Anissa and Ian for putting on this amazing event. As first events go, it went over flawlessly. I want to thank my opponent, Alex, along with all the other fighters who train hard. It was super fun meeting all of you.
Happy birthday to you! Happy birthday, dear Jay! Happy birthday to you!
Guys, I have a brilliant idea. What if we do the In My Feelings Challenge? What do you think?
What's the In My Feelings Challenge?
It was that dance people did outside of their moving cars in 2018.
That's stupid.
I know! It's weird to me that YouTube Rewind 2018 came out over 5 years ago, which makes it old enough to be something to reminisce about. There's a fresh generation of iPad kids who don't get to experience the yearly tradition of coming together as a community and watching the newest YouTube Rewind, and absolutely hating it. In case you all forgot, the website YouTube.com used to make these celebratory videos showcasing all the important events and memes that had happened throughout the year. And all these YouTubers would get together and do a silly little dance, and everyone had a grand old time. And since these videos were produced by the very platform you're currently watching this on, Rewinds would always receive a lot of attention. Now, according to my memory, YouTube Rewinds were pretty well received. At first. But you see, as time went on, the general public and the YouTubers involved started to grow weary. People were throwing around words like cringe, and this isn't what YouTube represents, and ah-ha-ha, that's that. Ah, that's that. And it all accumulated to YouTube's magnum opus, YouTube Rewind 2018. Everyone controls Rewind. Hashtag YouTube Rewind. which is a video that was so universally hated that it holds the world record for most disliked video ever. A record it will now hold perpetually because of the whole dislike thing. The audience wasn't happy, the YouTubers involved weren't happy, until finally YouTube snapped and was like, "All right, fine, if no one wants it, we'll stop doing it. We were just doing this as a favor anyways." And so YouTube discontinued the Rewind project indefinitely, with 2018 being the last time we ever got a Rewind.
What about me, James?
How dare you even consider yourself worthy of being called a Rewind 2019? A top 10 video? Really? At least 2011 had Rebecca Black hosting. Leave 2019 before I tell you the top 10 ways on how I'm gonna hurt you! So getting back to the actual last YouTube Rewind, you know, the one with the most dislikes in the whole world, if we skip to 3 minutes and 2 seconds into that video, we see...
Guys, let's do the In My Feelings challenge!
Oh, geez. That's me. I know I'm a little late to the party, but since we've all had enough time to grow and reflect as people, I would like to finally share some of my thoughts and experiences working on YouTube Rewind 2018. The first thing I want to talk about is how none of the YouTubers involved got any type of monetary compensation. At least none of the ones I talked to did. This was a big issue that a lot of other YouTubers had in their expose videos, but I personally was not bothered by it. Was I getting paid in exposure? Yes. In fact, I actually lost money doing this because I had to get my friend Rush to animate some of the scenes, so I, you know, paid him for his work. But what I'm trying to tell you is that as much as I'm about to complain about YouTube Rewind, don't feel any sort of empathy for me, okay? I did this to myself. I think the best piece of advice I could give you is that if YouTube ever reaches out to you and is like, "Hey, do you want to be a part of Rewind?" you should say, "Let me read the script first." But I didn't know that in 2018, and I also didn't know that in 2017. If you look at YouTube Rewind 2017 and watch all the way to the end, keep going. Right there. Right there in the credits is me and Jaden doing a floss in space. It was a lot cooler back then. They also wanted all the animators to animate our characters in the middle of a jello fight, and I think they wanted to put our cartoon characters over footage of real-life YouTubers in the middle of a jello fight, but they gave us no direction, and I don't think they ever filmed a scene where they were like, "Okay, real-life YouTubers, remember to leave that spot empty because that's where the animated guy's gonna go." Because, you know, they gotta plan that kind of stuff out ahead of time, right? So instead, they just threw our unusable animated jello fight with no background at the very end as this extremely out-of-place post-credit scene. So 2017 was pretty uneventful for me. Like, yeah, I was in YouTube Rewind, but, you know, I was in the credits. Who's going to stick around and watch the credits, you know? But 2018 was going to be my year. Rewind wanted me back, and this time they were giving me a speaking role. Holy shit. My line was going to be, "Guys, let's do the In My Feelings challenge." And then the YouTuber Swoozy, who would be in his real-life human form, would say, "Right?" And then we'd fist bump Who Framed Roger Rabbit style. So do you remember that trend in 2018 where people were doing that dance outside of their moving car? Well, apparently, that was called the In My Feelings challenge. Back in 2018, I didn't even know it was called that. I thought it was called... stupid. Now, if you've at all watched YouTube Rewind 2018, Everyone Controls Rewind, hashtag YouTube Rewind, you might be wondering why after I specifically suggest we do the In My Feelings challenge, that not a single YouTuber or talk show host can be seen dancing outside of a moving vehicle. That's because YouTube didn't want to promote unsafe behavior. So they didn't want to show anyone dancing outside of a car. So... they weren't really doing the challenge then, were they? YouTube, if you don't want to promote unsafe behavior, don't promote the In My F***ing Feelings challenge. Kids are still going to look up the In My Feelings challenge and then watch multiple videos of people dancing outside of cars on YouTube.
We don't want to promote unsafe behavior.
It's on your platform, dog. You know, looking back, that should have been my first red flag, but I was still optimistic. I was so excited to be a part of this huge project, and I knew there were going to be a bunch of YouTubers involved, but I was going to be one of the few animated ones. I was going to stand out. I was going to be the odd one out. Knowing how Rewind handled animation in 2017, when they asked me to be a part of 2018, I told them, hey, love the line, but I think it would be a good idea if we met in person, you know, and that way you can show me everything you're planning, and I can ask you all the right questions. And they agreed and invited me to visit the set the day they were filming Swoozie's line. So I was there, physically behind the camera, when Swoozie said, right? And then fist-bumped nothing. I got to experience what it was like to be on a real film set with actors and directors and costumes and catering and makeup, and it was a lot, honestly, for just one line. And maybe it was because they had booked Swoozie for a full hour, but they had this beautiful man say, right? And then fist bump nothing no less than 50 times. It's one line, guys. I think we got it. And then after, like, take 87, my stomach sank when the director said, okay, Swoozie, how about you try saying, guys, let's do the In My Feelings challenge. Wait a minute. That's my line. Are we changing it? Which line am I animating now? Do you want me to do both, just like how you got Swoozie to do both? And what, oh, you'll pick your favorites? I asked the director right there which line was I animating, and he said he was going to let me know. And then we went outside and filmed Swoozie dance in front of a brick wall, and which parts of him dancing was I going to animate my guy next to? He said he was going to let me know that too. So I took all the information I learned that day and referred it back to the other animators. What they wanted were two shots. They wanted 5 seconds of our characters dancing, and they wanted another shot of all of us sitting around a campfire singing horribly. After doing some quick math, I realized that if all 7 of us animators did a 5-second dance, that would be 35 seconds of cartoons dancing, which for a YouTube Rewind would be a lot of screen time. I had a sinking feeling that they weren't going to be using our full 5-second clips. And they didn't even let me know. Now, for my life-changing speaking role, I had to record my line on my own, which normally wouldn't be a problem. But in late 2018, I had just moved to California, and I didn't have my own setup set up. And to make the whole situation worse, I was only given 1 week to finish my animation and record my line. So, you know, the clock was ticking. Now, I think the second best piece of advice I could give you is that if you're ever in need of a quick jerry-rigged sound booth, go into your closet and hide under a comforter. In fact,
hello, real-life human James here, coming to you on a Blue Yeti inside of a bathroom. The acoustics in here are terrible. Could you imagine voicing a cartoon character in this? Guys, let's do the In My Feelings challenge. See, it doesn't work. Now.
All right, and now we're here inside of our makeshift sound booth, and you can hopefully hear the quality change right away, you know, like, guys, let's do the In My Feelings challenge. See, you know, we don't need expensive sound booths to have a good time. But back in 2018, I wanted the most important line in my career to be recorded in a professional sound booth. Luckily, I was in luck. You see, California is one of the few places home to something called a YouTube space. A YouTube space advertises itself as a place to aid content creators, providing them with facilities to create content for their YouTube channels. And to access said facilities, you needed at least 10,000 subscribers. A little weird they put a number on it, but I get it. I had just moved to California. I knew I was going to be hitting this place up all the time. When I first went to the YouTube space, I didn't call ahead or set up an appointment or anything because there wasn't an option to do so on the website. But I figured they would have to help me out, right? The line I needed to record was for a YouTube Rewind. And you're a YouTube space! Like, Susan personally asked me to be here, you know? So I drove an hour to the space, I went inside, showed them my sub count, and they said that in order to use the facilities, I had to fill out all these forms on my computer back home. But it's for you to rewind. Then I drove another hour back home and started filling out the forms, but by the time I got to the quizzes, I realized, I think this wild goose chase is probably going to take longer than a week to resolve. With time running out, I gingerly asked my new friend Aaron if I could use his setup, and he said yes, and I didn't even have to show him my sub count. I mean, I showed him anyway, though. So the line you hear me say in the 2018 Rewind was recorded in the Game Grumps office, which I think means, at the very least, Game Grumps deserves to be credited in the description of Rewind. Come on, YouTube! They were the only ones who took me in when your own company turned me away! The deadline was fast approaching. I mean, it was fast approaching as soon as I got it, but I've been in crunch mode before, and I'm sure the nameless video editors were just trying to hit their impossibly tight deadlines too. I reminded myself what I was making all of these sacrifices for. Everyone was going to unanimously love this video and what it represents and look at my channel afterwards and subscribe. December 6th, 2018. A day that changed history. It was raining that day, and the world was exposed to what YouTube had been cooking up. And they all collectively hated it. Like, a lot. Like, to the point where I would be lucky if I didn't lose subscribers. I think the audience knew that none of the YouTubers involved had any say in the creative process. We were just reading our lines from YouTube script, you know? So at least I get to say I'm in the most disliked video in history, and no one's too mad at me. Right? So, was all of this stress worth it? Now, I got paid in exposure, and the exposure was overwhelmingly negative. In fact, I think Rewind was only positive for one other YouTuber. Do you have any guesses? Jaden motherfucking Animations pulled off the biggest prank of 2018. One of the reasons people disliked 2018's Rewind was because PewDiePie, the number one YouTuber at the time, wasn't included. But Jaden, being the genius that she is, knew he wasn't going to be included again, so she snuck in a PewDiePie reference into her 5-second dance, and no one caught it, and it made the final cut. Jaden was crowned the least cringy part of Rewind, and everyone loved her, and she got a big boost in subscribers, and all I gotta say to that is... good job, Jaden. How are you enjoying that cake and eating it, too? Now, there are a lot of valid reasons why people disliked 2018's Rewind. One of them being that the video starts out with Will Smith? He's not a YouTuber. But they didn't seem to mind when 2016 started out with The Rock and 2017 started with The Colbert Show, but whatever. And I don't know if you remember what YouTube was like in 2018, but it was in the news a couple of times, you know, over a few small things. However, with all of that being said, I do genuinely miss YouTube Rewinds. Getting to wake up and go, wow, it's December and a new YouTube Rewind just dropped. I'm going to watch it. And then I get to see a handful of YouTubers I recognize do a dance and not recognize any of the other YouTubers. And then I get to see the rest of the internet's reaction to it. It's better than Christmas for me. Even if it's the cringiest video ever, we still all watched it together as a community. And I think that's what I miss the most, when YouTube felt more like a community. As long as it's not a top 10 video, I welcome back YouTube Rewinds with open arms. And if they do make a comeback, I don't think I'd want to be a part of them. Not because I got burned in 2018, but because I wouldn't want to rob another ignorant YouTuber of the once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to be taken advantage of and work for free and be a part of history. For now, we just have to live with the 9 Rewinds we do have. But if you're like me and are just dying to see more YouTube Rewind content, and I know you are because you're still here, I've discovered a pretty massive Easter egg. In the description of Rewind 2018 is a link to See All the Easter Eggs. And for your viewing pleasure are 13 brand new shorts that I can only describe as skits that were edited together with existing Rewind footage. I don't think that's what an Easter egg is. They're not that funny and are pretty hard to watch, but isn't that what Rewind's all about? Have a good night.
Kiki, do you love me? Are you riding? Don't you ever say, because I want you.
And I want you.
And I want you.
And I want
you. Don't you ever did hey.
Oh, that's that.
I don't know the rest of the words.
Oh, that's that.
All right, I think we got it. I have never played Fortnite. but we're going to be playing a lot of it today, so buckle up. If I am going to get cracked, then I should probably download the game. Wait, what's an epic launcher? I just want to play Fortnite. Luckily, this endeavor won't break the bank because Fortnite is a free game. Really? I get to experience all of this for free? Today, we're going to be playing 100 games of Fortnite to see if we can actually improve, develop a skill, and try and earn that elusive victory royale. I mean, we're not playing Fortnite. I'm playing Fortnite. You're watching a YouTube video. Now, before we get into any games, let's first... Alright, I'm just going to go with my standard username, no big deal, and... Oh. Okay, yeah, that one's probably on me. The game's been out for 7 years, so I hope whoever has that account has been earning me a lot of dubs and make me look good. Okay, I guess we should keep a low profile. We don't want to get stream sniped, you know? So after hours of brainstorming, I settled on the name GatorGuy333, because I'm the GatorGuy333. There are two popular modes to play Fortnite. There's the classic Battle Royale mode with all the features and doodads that made the game as popular as it is, like doing this. And then there's Zero Build, where there's none of that shit. Now, which mode is the more competitive mode? Whichever mode I'm playing. For my very first game, I decided to play the classic Battle Royale mode, baby. We're playing Fortnite like how God intended. Builds on, ranked off, skin default. What, you think I'm gonna buy a skin? You think I'm gonna spend money on a free game? Pfft, get out of here. Oh my God, is that Peter Griffin? All right, enough talk. Let's start. I would like to remind you that I'm playing Fortnite for the very first time.
Who's shooting me? Oh God.
I didn't have a friend on call to tell me what buttons to press or give me emotional support. Like, no one told me, hey, don't drop that mythic gun for shield blasters. Shield blasters aren't even that good. Also, my go-to video games are Mario Maker and Tetris. I'm not really a first-person kind of shooter. What do you mean it's technically a third-person shooter? Who are the other two people? Instead of doing all of these unnecessary side quests, right now, my one and only quest is to be the best and not rest until I conquest all the sweats.
Do I take fall damage in this game?
Don't worry, Past James. You'll find out soon enough. I landed in fencing fields, and the second my feet touched the ground, I started getting shot at. I went inside a building and started breaking random objects, hoping that there was a gun inside them.
This is horrible sound.
And I grabbed a rare Striker AR. The very first gun of my Fortnite career and it's already a rare? Let's go, dude. But then I found an uncommon shotgun just lying on the floor, and I had to pick which gun I was going to take to battle because my inventory was already full of priceless items. I decided to keep my rare gun because it had more bullets and because I like the color blue more than green, so.
Can I only hold one gun, or is it like my inventory is full? Who am I talking to? Oh! Ah! You stood no chance, bro. You stood no chance.
In that moment, I had gotten what I thought was my very first Fortnite kill. This, however, was not another player, but rather one of the many NPCs just wandering around the map. But I didn't know that at the time, so there was nothing but pure joy on my face. Almost immediately, I got a second Fortnite kill, and my suspicions that these were actually computer players were growing.
Is this a bot? Why can't I... They, like, didn't hurt me at all.
I started shooting what looked like a final boss, but had run out of bullets. Uh-oh. I ran away, narrowly dodging every shot being fired at me. I healed up, found another gun, tried shooting the boss again, ran out of bullets again, and then I ran away. Again. Hey, that's two confrontations where I didn't die. Clearly, I'm a natural. I knew I had to get away from the danger, so I started building a ramp.
And, like... We're building a staircase. Ah, oh, God. No. No, that's how it happened. That's how I went out.
So, yes, there is fall damage in Fortnite. You know what? Build mode sucks. Build mode's what killed me. We're done doing that. We're doing no build from now on. Now, before we get into game two, I would like to briefly explain some of the fundamentals I learned from playing that I wish someone explained to me. Starting with the... Guns are going to be your main tool for killing. And every gun has a rarity assigned to it, ranging from common, uncommon, rare, epic, mythic, and legendary. Those last two might be switched. Actually, I never knew which adjective was better. But either way, orange and yellow guns are more rare than rare guns and more epic than epic ones. I'm sorry if you already know this, okay? This is just how I process things. Okay, I have to make a YouTube video about it. An uncommon sniper rifle could have the best scope in the game, while an epic one could have no scope at all. The epic sniper will do more damage and have a faster reload time, but if you can't hit anyone due to a lack of scope, which gun's actually better? Doesn't matter for me, I still couldn't hit anyone regardless. Also, this is an Overwatch 2. You have a limited amount of ammo, which in the early game is something you really have to be mindful of. I learned that my first day.
I'm out.
You'll just have to play the game to figure out which guns click with you, but my favorite guns are shotguns. And I have the data to back it up. The damage they do, as well as you not even needing good aim to do damage, make them a great choice for getting kills.
Fun! I'm having fun!
Unfortunately, you can't just go walking around with every shotgun you find. You only have 5 inventory slots that you have to use wisely. And you'll want to save at least 2 of those slots for a healing item and a specialty item. So really, you should only be going around with a maximum of 3 guns. But I'm not here to backseat game, alright? You can do whatever you want. It's a free game. Okay, enough explaining. Let's get back to match. I landed in fencing fields and immediately started getting shot at again. Not a super great start, I know.
How did you get a weapon so fast?
I found a gun, but with 3 other people shooting me, I decided my best option was to hide in a dumpster. Which turned out to be a terrible hiding spot because the boss lady found me in 5 seconds. And for the next 4 minutes, I grabbed any gun or grenade I could find and started using them on all the grunts shooting me. And I was slowly starting to pick them off.
What's up? What's up, guys? How's it going? How many kills is this? 1?
I was gaming so hard that I didn't even realize that this right here was my first actual Fortnite kill. XXX Dark Tonics XX. I'm sorry I had to do it to you, but you were the first player I ever eliminated. I hope knowing this fact makes you feel a sense of pride and accomplishment in me. My KD ratio is now perfectly balanced, so that's good. I took a moment to figure out the controls, and I started taking down some more players.
Let me see if I can, zoom in. Okay, I can crouch. Nope, that's... Oh, okay. Is there, a... Oh, if I hold... Oh, that's how I do it. What are you? Rare, and you have 30... Oh, wait, my other gun had 105 bullets.
With the boss eliminated, I opened a vault with a key card and found 2 epic guns and a rocket launcher. Also, on the way to the vault, I may or may not have dropped a mythic gun for some shield blasters. Thankfully, no one saw, so that would have been embarrassing.
Where's Tilted Towers? What was that?
A giant floating island appeared in the sky, and I decided to head up it.
See ya!
In the middle of the island, I started to capture a flag, and when I successfully captured it, I was rewarded with even more mythic guns that I didn't pick up for some reason. I'm sorry, rewatching this footage is just as painful for you as it is for me, okay?
Supersonic racing. Everybody was supersonic racing. Come on, load! Dude, I don't want to count any chickens or anything, but are we doing this?
I saw the storm closing in, and then I noticed...
Oh, there's only 2 people! It's me and one other guy!
And then this amazing clutch happened.
Okay, load. Where'd you go? Where is she? There she is. What do I do now?
Well, that just happened. My second game ever, and I already got a dub? Oh, you? Well, all of you astute, sweaty Fortnite players watching might have noticed that my final opponent kinda sucked ass. I mean, look at him. We're both in a completely open area, and this player can't even land a single hit on me. And they made it into the top 2? That's because... No matter how good you are at Fortnite, After every round, there's one winner and 99 losers. And if every player has an equal chance of winning, that would mean you're still losing 99% of the time. And if you were playing a video game where you lost 99% of the time, you would probably stop having fun and never play the game again. Or not, I don't know, I've never played Dark Souls. So what Epic Games does to remedy this is they fill up every match with bots who kind of suck shit. This way, you can get some easy kills on other players and make it further into every game. At least you got 3 kills in 20th place, right? That doesn't feel as bad as getting 99th. However, the unintended consequence of this is that now, after every kill you get, there's a little thought in the back of your head thinking, did I actually kill someone with a soul, or is Fortnite going easy on me? So there's a pretty big chance that my first Fortnite kill, XXX Dark Tonic XXX, wasn't even a real person that could feel proud of me. Chances are, none of these other players are real. Here are my opponents. Eventually, we'll be at a high enough level where it'll start to feel like, you know, a challenge. We're just gonna keep trucking along. Let's start map.
No, 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 no. Okay. Oh, I'm out. I'm out. Cool. Hello. Hello.
Okay, I guess we'll chalk up those last two games to beginner's luck. Surely things will go differently in math.
A cabbage and a coconut. Cool. Let me just bite into that. And shotgun and shotgun and shotgun. Made me waste all my ammo, dude. Okay, anyone at all? Hello? Too easy! Too-
Technically speaking, no one has killed me yet. At least in match 2, I was the one who eliminated the last player, but matches 3 and 4 just handed me a crown on a fluffy pillow. You know, I wanted to do this really cool thing where we looked at spreadsheets and tracked my progress, but all the data's gonna get kinda messed up if I just keep winning all the time. Why learn the game or develop a strategy if everything I'm doing results in a win? It's upsetting that I'm already perfect. I hope this is still a good idea for a video. We still have a whole lot more Fortnite to get through, so let's just see if we can stumble and fumble our way into even more victory.
Come on. Ah! Ah! Oh, this is what loss feels like.
I think those 3 wins in a row made me a little cocky. I mean, no one has been able to stop me, so I wasn't trying anything special. When I saw another player, I would just do my normal strategy of standing still and shooting, and it got me 15th place. But this does prove that I can be stopped. Finally, we've faced a worthy opponent. Sheeny Shear. F*** you, Sheeny Shear. Oh well, I guess we couldn't win them all. I mean, I still have more wins than losses at this point. As long as the next 50 games go well, then I won't be complaining.
I was looking at the map, bro!
How do I thank the bus driver? I would love to thank them, but I unfortunately do not know the button to thank them.
Gee! I don't know what this is, but I'm afraid to use it. I don't know what that does! I don't know what that does! Whoa, 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 whoa! No. Oh boy. Oh no. Ooh. Oh, oh. Please don't, please don't. Oh. One of these days we're gonna learn how to thank the bus driver. $99. Oh, you're not f***ing around?
Well, me neither.
I don't know what I'm doing, you guys. Wish I knew how to thank the bus driver. The guy, oh! What is this? Medallion. Cool. I want you. Look at the camera floof.
Camera's right there. Floof.
What the? What just happened?
I was in the middle of a grind. How come when I shoot people, it takes like 4 or 5 hits? I'm starting to get in heated gamer moments.
Am I just bad at the game? Oh, I am bad at the game.
Oh!
What is this? How do I get you here? You got me.
Cool.
B?
Oh! It's B! That was bad.
This match I started doing pretty well in.
We can't keep doing this. We can't.
I landed in Pleasant Plaza and got 3 kills without taking any damage.
We got the jump on him.
I started getting even more kills and was picking up some pretty good loot. I even picked up these 3 medallions, not knowing what they did. And before I knew it, there was only me and one person left.
There's only one person left?
This hadn't happened since those first 3 games, which I frankly didn't deserve to win.
Where are you?
I was upset, yes, but I can accept when I've been outplayed.
How did that happen?
In this match, I got my first and only kill with a cluster clinger right at the very start. Overall, I was able to get 9 kills this match. There were a lot of close calls in this game, but I was always able to find health packs and heal back up. As long as I stayed in the storm circle, I was going to let the other players come to me. And my patience paid off because once again, I ended up in the top 2 and I started to get nervous.
Oh, fiddlesticks. No.
I made some dumb mistakes. Like once again, not picking up those legendary guns that were on the ground. What? I only got 3 kills this match, but I made it to the top 3 with a legendary run-and-pump shotgun. If you've played Fortnite, you know this is the most superior shotgun out of all the shotguns. I saw the last 2 players fighting by the storm, and instead of waiting for them to kill each other, I sniped Banana Joe 934 from afar. I was in second place yet again, but this time I had the last player in my sights.
Where are you? I know about that running over people trick.
No! Ooh.
I want to talk about the top 2 jitters. Dude, I can't describe how anxiety-inducing it is being one of the last 2 players alive. You have narrowly survived every challenge and bot thrown at you for the last 20 minutes, and now the only thing that stands between you and a victory royale is the best player in the game. Getting into the top 2, I would literally be shaking and making mistakes that I couldn't afford to make. With so many close games, I decided to call it a night, and as my head rested on my pillow, I only had one question on my mind. How? By this point, Fortnite had started to slip into my subconscious. I was having dreams about Fortnite. One time I was lying in bed and I heard this sound. And I thought, there's someone nearby. I need to kill them. I pretty much got the gist of Fortnite. I had been to all the places on the map, I knew what every gun did, but I couldn't get over the second place hump. I needed to elevate my Fortnite skills. I needed to consult the sacred... Is anyone going to interrupt me? No? Look, not getting outside help was never part of the challenge, okay? Is it fair that everyone else already knows the buttons when I didn't even know what button used the scope? How am I supposed to know that? No one ever told me you can pick up the business turret after it's been thrown. And I'll never be able to pick them up. Here is the official guide to Fortnite. It's full of useful information like telling me where Tilted Towers or Loot Lake is. Oh, here's something. Surviving the endgame. It says you need to prepare to improvise.
To survive this phase of the game, you'll want to have a few structures you can build. Okay, maybe this won't be helpful. Ah, here we go. You can claim a victory royale without building a single structure in the game, but you'll need sharp reflexes and to be able to move deftly to pull it off. Okay, so skill issue is what the official guidebook says. I was kind of hoping for some, I don't know, useful strategies? Something like, here's a link to an aimbot. So I decided to ask a real human for some help, and my friend Rush told me, hey, did you know there's a setting you can turn on that lets you visually see what direction noises are coming from? What? So now, even if my ears can't actually hear footsteps, the game will tell me, hey, there's footsteps to your right. Someone is definitely nearby. Now, this setting is for hearing impaired people. So is me using this setting as an able-bodied hearing man cheating, kind of? Yeah, kind of. But I need every bit of help I can get. And I bet most of you play with this setting on too, and you hear just fine. Now let's see if we can apply this useful tool as we head into map. Oh, I have some bad news. I don't normally work with external hard drives, so I didn't realize these things were made out of eggshells. I was storing all of my footage on an external hard drive, and I guess I forgot to put it on its tiny pillow or something, because after I stored over 300 gigs worth of footage onto it, it stopped working. I took it to a data recovery specialist, and they quoted me $950 to repair it. Oh boy, I mean, I gotta go for it. The stuff on this hard drive's priceless. But then they were like, actually, there's nothing we can do, idiot, loser. You see these pictures we sent you? That means it's too damaged beyond repair. What were you doing to this hard drive? Were you throwing it on the ground? Were you hitting it with a hammer? So, unfortunately, we will never get to see games 63 through 99. Hey, are you crying?
No. Who are you?
I am your fairy Fortnite godmother. I'm here to help you.
Are you going to use magic to fix my hard drive?
What? Do you think I have magical powers?
I don't... Yes?
Magic can't change the fact that you saved all of your important, irreplaceable footage onto a single hard drive, stupid. But luckily, my...